The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
The work week starts with another Calgary Flames game day as they get set for the Ottawa Senators tonight. It is a 5 o'clock start, means a 4 o'clock warm-up, which means we are jammed on the Big Show today. Peter Klein and Will Nault with you here in the 1 o'clock hour. Logan Gordon, our outstanding producer. Will, a little bit better feeling on this game day compared to where we were going into the weekend. How you feeling on this Flames team after one good performance over the weekend?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me, again, I think it was Pat who texted this to the group on Saturday, and I agreed 1,000%, wholeheartedly agreed with him, and that is the fact that you could really see this coming from a mile away. In fact, if they didn't play well or didn't have a better effort on Saturday, it would have been, you know, five alarm bells here on this Monday afternoon. So, you know, to use a term I used a couple weeks ago, I do feel like it's a bit of a softer landing here on this Monday, but by no means am I going to tell you it's all solved and everything is all good. I mentioned it with Corey last hour. I'm going to bounce it off Pat. I'll bounce it off you right now. And that's just the lines. I mean, look, I understand this is where Jeff Ward felt he needed to go. We talked about this after the game on Thursday when they lost 6-1, and we saw those lines for the kind of the back half of that game. And that was just the thought of, okay, is this the area Calgary has to go, at least until Derek Ryan is healthy? And again, I don't want to take anything away from Ottawa and certainly don't want to necessarily bury them while they're alive, but this is a team that by no means scares you as an opponent in this division. And I just wonder what those line combinations will do against the tougher opponent, because the whole reason they went away from them was to better match up their lines, to put Gaudreau and Monahan in an advantageous offensive spot. And, you know, for the most part, it has worked. When there's been injuries and whatnot, their depth is certainly maybe not been as strong as we had thought going into the year. So a long way of asking you, Klein, if you think this is sustainable long-term or you think this is something that really should only be a short-term experiment until Derek Ryan gets back, because I don't know how they stack up against a better team. And hey, they might work for a game or two. We've seen that before, as Corey talked about in the noon hit with us. I mean, this is certainly, or these line combinations have certainly worked for extended periods in the past. I'm not going to sit here and say they're not going to work, but I loved Corey, the way Corey phrased it. You know, can we really say this team is making progress if we're just going back to old hat and relying on those to create offense? I have a hard time believing that there has been progress made.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I come down to. A couple of things. One, the fact that you needed your break glass in case of emergency against Ottawa was a bit of a concern for me. But also with this group, like the whole thing about this offseason was changing things up and providing a bit more versatility to the lineup so that what happened the last couple of times the Flames have been in the playoffs doesn't happen again. And now we're going back to the same lines we saw the last time this team did that thing in the playoffs, with obviously a couple of changes. It's not one for one exactly, but we're going back to the same forward groups that, while there was some flashes, also a team that got eliminated in the playoffs. And no Matthew Tkachuk, I will grant you that. But I have a tough time saying that it's a positive when you're going back to old reliable, but at the same time saying that this season is going to be different. Like I don't really know how you can get different results going back to the thing that has given you the same results over and over and over again. I believe the analogy you use is banging your head against the wall. And as I say that, I picture David Riddick. So it worked, and they played all right against an Ottawa Senators team that was not ready for that hockey game, specifically an Ottawa Senators goalie that wasn't ready for that hockey game. But I really have a tough time thinking that as this team is constructed with those lines, that this is the way that they're going to A, even get into the playoffs, but B, that once you get in the postseason, that all of a sudden something is going to be different just because. Like, I don't buy that. So I am not waxing as poetic about these new old line combinations as some other people might be.
Yeah, what is old is new again, but I'm not really sure it's a good thing for the Calgary Flames. And again, I think the depth has certainly been worse than maybe we had thought going into the season.
Much worse.
Certainly, yeah, you certainly have not gotten what you had expected from Levo and Simone and even Nordstrom to an extent. It just hasn't worked. Derek Ryan getting injured hasn't really helped the situation as you try to solidify your bottom six. But that's, I mean, realistically, this road trip and what we're talking about right now with the line combinations, Klein, it's kind of been that's been the season for the Flames. Inconsistency in effort, inconsistency in line combinations, and really just not knowing what to expect from night to night. And again, it feels awful, and it feels like we're just being so disrespectful to Ottawa. But yeah, I'm sorry, a 6-3 win on 11 o'clock game on a Saturday. Like, I need to see it again tonight. I need to see it again on Thursday. And quite frankly, the position this team is in right now, they're going to have to go on quite a run here over the final 34, 35 games to make the playoffs. And I don't know if that's ever a spot we expected this team to be going or heading into the season. And again, maybe our expectations were too high, Klein. But if you're having to go back to these line combinations just to make the playoffs, I have a hard time believing there's been a lot of progress made of becoming an elite team or taking those next steps, you know? Klein, I think you're on mute again.
Yeah, no, definitely was. Yeah, I'm back. But no, like one of the things that I find interesting is that like from the center ice position, you have the least amount of depth and you move one of your centers to the wing. And I get that you move Sam Bennett back, but it's just, okay, well, once Derek Ryan comes back, maybe things change. It's like, I don't know, like this feels like not the line combinations to be using when you're down a center. But again, I thought Sam Bennett was fine down the middle. It's just the thing that I keep coming back to, and the problem is they were never going to prove me wrong or prove otherwise against Ottawa. And we keep saying, all due respect to Ottawa, the Sens are 17-15-1. Like this is, I think we are giving them due respect by saying they're a young, fun, exciting team that you should be beating quite handily. And the Flames did that. And this was never about proving to us that you have figured things out. It was just, don't have a complete fall apart, pick up the points where you're supposed to, and move on. And the problem is, they set the bar so freaking low after that first game that you come into the second one and it's all right, well, let's see if they can bounce back. And people are happy with this because it happens all the time with this team where it's a couple of bad efforts, then they try really, really hard for a couple of games and people buy in and they take their foot off the gas. It's exactly what we said was going to happen. So yes, congratulations. You went out and took care of business against the Ottawa Senators. But to your point, do that again tonight. Do not take the foot off the gas pedal or whatever analogy you want to use. Don't mute your mic in the middle of the segment at this point. Just absolutely grind your way through. And I think from the Flames perspective, I'm going to need to see it regardless of what the lines look like. If these lines can get that consistent of an effort from this team, then go for it and figure out the playoff thing later. Because right now, again, we are back at a point where we are looking for the Flames to string together consistent efforts on a consistent basis. We're not looking for results. It is all about the process. And that's still what's kind of frustrating to me as we watch this team go along.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, some listening might say we're being extremely harsh markers, but I'm sorry. Like they, for me, this hockey club has not earned any leash. And part of the reason why there hasn't been any progress, especially come playoff time, is because, and this is all I said last week, the last 2 days, Thursday and Friday. Well, mostly Friday after that Thursday 6-1 loss. How many times have we seen that from this team before?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's Ottawa or Toronto. Like, look at Monday, for example. A week ago tonight, the Flames shut out the Maple Leafs 3-0 and looked like a really good hockey team. And what happened the next two games? Like, I'm sorry. I'm tired of seeing it for one or two games. So yeah. To those on the text line saying, oh my goodness, guys, they won. Take it easy. Well, sorry. That's part of the problem. It's because the fan base and whoever else lets them off the hook. And they read their headlines and look at how great they are. Maybe they don't do that. I don't know. But I'm sorry. I've seen the game or two push many times before. I've probably seen this movie with this core group 60 times before. So yeah. I'm sorry if I come across as a harsh marker to you listening, then I'm sorry. Like, I can't be an easy marker anymore. This team has not earned that long leash. They need to continue to be better, and they need to continue to improve. So going back to the old lines, if that's what you need to get back on track and get your season back, then sure, go for it. To Mike's point on the text line, yeah, if that's what you need, then go for it. And we'll cross the playoff bridge when we get there, if they get there. Because right now, that's a huge if on the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, again, I guess the only point I have here, Klein, is I'm sorry if that comes across harsh, but I've seen this team come back, and I've seen, again, for Mark Giordano, like, it's great to change it and be awesome and lead by example and tell Connor Brown to go to the gym and all that. That's great. I've seen this for a game or two before. I want to see it consistently, and they have not done that. And that's the most frustrating part. So I need to see what happens tonight.
Which, by the way, if you're getting beaked, go back to the gym by a 37-year-old. Like, that just hits you a little bit differently in the soul. But yeah, no, to your point, like, if we came on and did, hey, look at this, problem solved, after every one of these, we would be doing that show like 17 yep. times a year. So no, I'm with you. Not going to let them off the hook quite that easily. Do want to continue this in a matter of moments. But again, it was a Flames victory. We've had to play these on not fun occasions, but hey, enjoy the.
Yeah, the only thing missing this time, Klein, is there's not six goal horns. Like, it's all silent, which is too bad. But right. They did score six.
Yes, yes. Bask in the sweetness of the silence as we play today's game in a minute.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, Calgary's original Infinity destination for over 28 years. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Good afternoon, hockey fans, and welcome inside Canadian Tire Centre in Ottawa for a matinee matchup between Matthew Tkachuk and the 9-10-2 Calgary Flames, and Brady Tkachuk and the 7-14-1 Ottawa Senators. Waits for some reinforcements, centers it, Valimaki scores! Juuso Valimaki puts the puck right through Matt Murray. His first goal of the season makes it 1-0 Flames. It's Andrew Mangiapane in front, Michael Backlund scores! Michael Backlund banks the puck off the goal post and into the back of the Senators' net. The steal by Lindholm, who shoots and scores! Elias Lindholm picks the pocket of Josh Norris and then fires the puck past Matt Murray. Now Monahan shoots and he scores! Sean Monahan rifles the puck past Matt Murray. The Flames score a power play goal and take a 4-1 lead. Backlund with a toe drag trying a shot, loses it, finds it, centers it, Mangiapane scores! Andrew Mangiapane bats the bouncing puck into the back of the Senators' net. Stutz will pick it up, but he can't clear it out. Anderson keeps it and gets it to Backlund, and they score! Michael Backlund took the shot, and Matthew Tkachuk tipped the puck into the top corner of the Senators' net. Gives it to Matheson, back to the blue line. In tight, Tkachuk spins, shoots, and scores! Matthew's got a goal, and now so does Brady. Brady Tkachuk finds the 5-hole of David Rittich, and the final few seconds will come off the clock, and a big bounce-back win for the Flames in our nation's capital this afternoon. And well, the Flames will be sipping some purple Gatorade following a 6-3 victory over the Senators in Ottawa this afternoon.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, Calgary's original Infinity destination for over 28 years. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
So there. That was enjoyable, wasn't it? As we continue on here on the big show, I know we have to get to Ryan Pike here in a matter of moments, Will, but we talk about looking for that effort and consistency. I thought this was a great clip. We had it with Lou, but I want to play it again. Here's Andrew Mangiapane talking about a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about on a daily basis, it seems, with this Flames team.
I just say always just kind of working hard, right? I know that just always, you're always kind of playing with, I guess, different line mates. You know, you don't know who you're kind of playing with some games, right? But you could always, I guess, count on, you know, your work ethic and do what you can control, right? The games of late, right? You're building chemistry with Bax, Chucky, and all that, right? So you got to keep building on that. And, you know, you just got to control kind of what you control. And that's, you could always give 100% in your work ethic and doing all the little things, right? And I think that'll help with, you know, points, with gameplay, with everything, right? It's blocking shots, being good in the D zone. You know, and that'll lead to good offensive chances for you.
oh my God, put a letter on that kid. And I'm only being slightly hyperbolic with that. I think that is like the exact mindset. And again, to the point, like we have heard the Flames say this a number of times, but I think from that dude specifically, we've seen him back it up all season long. And he is kind of the example that I use when I'm pointing out things that I would like to see from the Flames. A, not the biggest dude. So spare me the, oh, well, small, can't win puck battles. Yeah. He's small, winning puck battles, and just all the things he talked about. Line mates are different. Well, just control what you can control. Like, he is really turning into one of my favorite Flames, and he is turning into one of those guys who you just kind of feel like you win with players like Andrew Mangiapane. I don't know if he's ever going to be, he's probably never going to be the best player on the Calgary Flames, but you're going to be hard pressed to find a bunch who work harder than him. And he is everything that I want a lot of the other Flames to be right now.
Yeah, he is. He's kind of, you know, everything that you read or see about this guy is absolutely true. For starters, he is a smaller guy in stature, and he was a sixth-round pick. And first of all, to have an NHL career as a sixth-round pick is extremely rare. And to be in the NHL as quickly as this guy was as a sixth-round pick almost never happens. So that, to you right there, should tell you everything you need to know about this kid's work and where work ethic kind of ranks in his daily life. And that clip kind of tells you everything about the young man, as you said. I mean, yeah, tongue in cheek, put a letter on this man, but he works hard every single night. You never question it. And he's also a guy that from the minute I first saw him play hockey to now, it's never wavered. It's always been there. I mentioned the small in stature. I mean, he is, what, 5'10"? And he plays like he's 6'9". He doesn't back down from anything. He is first on pucks a lot of the time. If not first on that puck, he is right in there in the battle trying to get it back. So, yeah, really, really impressed with him. I know he had some really awful luck in terms of shooting percentage and, you know, chances in January. February was a wonderful month for Mangiapane. He was kind of on the verge of that breakout, and I do think we're going to see that increase here. And you know, being back with his pals, at least in the short term, of Tkachuk and Backlund certainly is not going to hurt either.
No, and it's funny that we've talked about, okay, well, Tkachuk kind of needs to get going. Well, put Mangiapane back with him. All right, Backlund kind of needs to get going. Well, put Mangiapane with him. And, I like, again, tongue-in-cheek saying put a letter on the dude, but I don't think we're that far away from it. And again, like, to your point, like, he just, it is exactly what you want him to be doing. It's exactly what you want everyone to be doing. And to the size thing, like, you put that determination with my size, and the dude's a Hall of Famer. So, yeah, couldn't be more impressed with what I've seen from Andrew Mangiapane over the last little bit. If you want to see what he does in highlight form, make sure you catch our Flames Roundup highlights twice a week, hosted by Pat Steinberg. Look for it online on Twitter, Facebook, and sportsnet.ca/960. Brought to you by Brightside by ATB, a new banking app to help you spend and save for what you love. It is a Flames game day. 4 o'clock warm-up, 5 o'clock puck drop. It is the Flames and the Ottawa Senators. The lineup blender was out for a little bit, but now we're going back to old reliable. What does Ryan Pike think of that? We will talk to the man from FlamesNation.ca coming up next.
Calgary's afternoon sports talk. Steinberg, Nault, and Klein. Steinberg, Nault, and Klein. The Big Show is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Find out the morning after about the night before. It's the Pinder Report. Weekdays on Boomer in the Morning, 6:45 and 9:35 a.m. Ryan Pinder does the research, digs all over the sports world to get you the fastest 15, 20, 25 minutes in morning radio. It's brought to you by Motorworks. Bring in your BMW for the best repairs and service in the city and the best price. They'll beat any competitor on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast. Get your Pinder Report. Weekday mornings right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Mental Game, in partnership with our friends at Movember, is out now. It's an intimate look at the setbacks and mental challenges experienced by top athletes, including Tyler Motte of the Vancouver Canucks and Gold Glove winner Tyler O'Neill. You can see how them and a number of other athletes work on their mental fitness to overcome them. This is something that has been brought up a lot over the last little bit in terms of professional athletes and dealing with their mental health, especially when they were in bubbles. And again, it just shows it does not matter your stature, what your paycheck says. Mental health cares not for any of that. And you'll get to see how these athletes have been able to work through this, whether it's on the ice, on the field, or at home. You'll learn ways to manage your own mental health and fitness and establish a self-care routine. Tyler O'Neill, for example, plays piano. That is a wonderful way to kind of escape into the experience. And Tyler Mott, go outside for a walk or a hike. We've talked about before, your boy's not the biggest hiker in the world, but just getting out to the mountains for a little bit and just breathing in that fresh air really does help to kind of calm the brain down for a little bit. The Mental Game, in partnership with Movember. Watch the full series now at sportsnet.ca/960/The Mental Game.
Your afternoon radio routine. This is The Big Show with Steinberg, Nault, and Klein. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Never boring with the Calgary Flames. We continue to figure out what we saw over the weekend after a 6-3 victory over the Ottawa Senators. Very pleased to welcome to the program our Monday regular, Ryan Pike from FlamesNation.ca. Mr. Pike, how are you today, sir?
I'm excellent. How about yourself?
Doing well, thank you very much. As I mentioned before, 6-3 win for the Flames last Saturday afternoon, I guess. A win over the Sens that was desperately needed. Don't know how much it proved from a Flames perspective. But before we get into some of the nuts and bolts, your takeaway and overall thoughts from Saturday's game against Ottawa.
Well, I think, you know, if you're the Flames, you're out there trying to prove that the Thursday debacle was, you know, a one-off. On Thursday, they looked kind of sluggish, kind of, you know, and they seemed to run out of gas the further they got into the game, which, you know, they played two very labor-intensive games against a very potent Toronto Maple Leafs team. And, you know, they sort of coming off the back end of that seemed like they just didn't have much in the tank on Thursday in the 6-1 loss. And so I think they were just hoping, hey, come out with a little bit more punch and make the game a little bit less labor intensive. And, you know, mission accomplished. They scored, you know, the first two goals. They got up to a 3-1 lead after the first period, and they never trailed in the game. So, you know, for a team that has spent, you know, way too much time chasing for their own good and for their own mental health within the games, I think it was a nice step in the right direction for them to be able to lead bell to bell. But that said, I mean, you know, all due respect to the Senators, but you tuned up the Ottawa Senators and still gave up three goals in the power play. So there's room for improvement. But I think, you know, Andrew Mangiapane, when he was talking to us after the game, you know, it's not like the whole team was doing cartwheels. They were all very businesslike. And they're, to summarize his comments, great. They got 2 points. Step in the right direction. But I still think, you know, ultimately, they're still right now 500. They're still outside of the playoff picture by both points and points percentage. So I think they're not quite where they want to be yet.
The power play goals allowed is fascinating. We look at the games against Toronto and how dynamite the penalty kill was. But I mean, hey, the Toronto power play is one thing. It's another that to try to shut down Ottawa. It's funny, the ebbs and flows in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, you know, I think one common thing that's sort of come up in the discourse around this team has been sort of looking at the performance of Joakim Nordstrom. He's, you know, by most 5-on-5 analytics metrics, not very good. You know, he hasn't really moved the needle much offensively at 5-on-5. He has played a lot of hockey, and correct me if I'm wrong, let me just queue up NHL.com. Yeah, 20 games, Joakim Nordstrom has 0 points. So, you know, but then again, I mean, he's playing for league minimum. And, you know, the big selling point for the Flames with him was, you know, he might not move the needle much at even strength, but, you know, that at the penalty kill, he'll be a big help for you. And, you know, the Flames penalty kill is sort of, you know, in that mushy middle of the league right now. They start off really, really well and sort of backslid into the muck, so to speak. And, you know, I think depending on how things go, you know, if you're the Flames, one big sore point for the team, you know, they've reverted back to the, what, you know, we affectionately call the bubble lines, where they have, you know, the three traditional lines, what we've been used to seeing over the last few months of the playoffs and into the, you know, into the beginning of last season. Nordstrom on the fourth line has been sort of, they're basically a little bit of a downgrade from the other three lines, all due respect. So, if you're the Flames, if Nordstrom's not going to be a needle mover at even strength, he better be a needle mover on the penalty kill. And if he isn't, then maybe they got to look at making some tinkers, because Josh Levo is sort of sitting there on the sidelines and his five-on-five metrics are great. He hasn't had any luck whatsoever with the puck, but he's a guy who's creating chances at five-on-five, but Nordstrom hasn't.
You mentioned the bubble lines, and that was kind of always in the background when we were looking at all of these changes from the Flames. You kind of knew that the bubble lines were there in case of emergency, and then the Flames broke that glass, so to speak, going into the game on Saturday. Is this something you would like to see from them long term, or would you still like to see the Lindholm at center set up for Calgary?
I love Lindholm at center, but you know, it's one of those things where when you put Lindholm at center, you're making the first line a little bit worse for the thought process of, well, it'll be better for the Flames to roll three good lines. You know, if you put Gaudreau, Monahan, and Lindholm on one line, that's a cracker of a line. They can just move the needle for you in every situation, and it makes the team a bit top-heavy, though. But you know, I think it sort of depends what you want to do, because they've been trying to roll a more even attack throughout the season so far, and it hasn't really materialized. So, you know, I think from a lot of perspectives, going back to the bubble lines is sort of going back to what they know works. You know, the first two lines are very good against Ottawa. Granted, it's Ottawa, but you know, the Lindholm line scored a couple times even strength. The Backlund line scored a couple times even strength, and then you know, the other two lines just they didn't take on much water. And you know, if they can figure that out and figure out some good chemistry and get some momentum going against Ottawa, then I think it bodes well for them going up to Edmonton and when they play Montreal next week, because you know, all things being equal, it doesn't matter how you get points at this point. You need to get points and start moving up the standings. And you know, if you know, saying you know, whatever, and breaking glass and going back to what works and reverting back to the familiar, if that's going to be the thing that gets them W's and gets them points and moves them up the standings, that's basically what they need to do.
Chatting with Ryan Pike from FlamesNation.ca here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Peter Klein. He's Will Nault.
Pike, your thoughts on the captain on Saturday? A lot of criticism around him lately, and I mean, I would say that a lot of it has not come out of line or come, you know, unfairly. I'm curious your thoughts on what you saw from number five on Saturday.
Saturday was really good. He was really good on Saturday. I think the challenge is, you know, we in this market and potentially league wide, we're used to seeing Mark Giordano basically laugh at Father Time. He's 37 years old. He's a unicorn. He's a guy that does not play the way his age looks. And you know, he's been one of the best defensemen in the league the last 5-10 years. Basically, since he put on the C in 2013, he's been an exceptional NHL defenseman. And at some point, you know, Elliot Friedman often jokes when he's on with you guys, Father Time's undefeated. Eventually, Father Time comes to get you. And I think we're starting to see, I think we started to see it last year during the playoffs, but I think it's sort of continuing this year. Mark Giordano is going from being an exceptionally good National Hockey League defenseman to being, you know, merely pretty good above average. And I think to a certain level, we need to sort of change our expectations for him. I think the challenge is now, you know, I think the best thing to the Flames this year has been the fact that Noah Hanifin seems to have taken a step, and Chris Tanev has just been, you know, as good as the most optimistic prognostications have, you know, have hoped he would be. And the nice thing is, you know, Rasmus Anderson's still a work in progress. He's going to hopefully get there, but you know, he's still figuring stuff out. Giordano, I think, is still figuring out what he has in the tank from time to time. But you have Tanev and Hanifin who can just bail them out and sort of give them a little bit of breathing room to, you know, to work on their game. And, you know, the last few games, I think Anderson and Giordano have started to look more and more like everyone hoped they would look. So, you know, Giordano, is he going to win a Norris this year? Probably not. But can he still be a productive NHL defenseman this year and potentially for a few years more? Well, yeah. But I think, you know, I think the challenge is figuring out how the Flames can use him to get the absolute most they can out of him, because, you know, he's, you know, incredibly well-respected in the organization, in that locker room. I mean, you know, so I think what we're going to see is the Flames start figuring out what they need to do to get you know, to basically squeeze all the hockey they can out of him, because, you know, Giordano is probably going to be with the Flames as long as he wants to be with the Flames, and he probably wears the C for as long as he wants to wear the C. But I think they want to give him the ability to be great in whatever situations they want to use him in. I think, like I said a couple times, it's just right now I think they're starting to wrap their heads around how they can do that.
Well, Mr. Pike, what is old is new again. That is obviously accurate for the Lions, but also is accurate for the Elias Lindholm debate, because it is back. I'm not saying it failed. I think him down the middle was great. I just don't think this team has enough depth to make it happen long term. I'm curious your thought on Lindholm center or on the right side. What is best for this team, and where do you see it in the future, I guess, going forward?
Honestly, I think with the way the team is set up, with I think top heavy actually works to their favor, because, you know, if you have, you know, Lindholm's a guy who can really move the needle in all three zones. And, you know, Gaudreau is an exceptional player in the offensive zone. Monahan's a pretty good player in all three zones. But I think, you know, Lindholm helps cover up the deficiencies those two players have in a way that, you know, they tried Sam Bennett there. They tried Lifo. They tried Simone. You know, they basically tried every winger imaginable on that right side of the Gaudreau-Monahan duo, and hasn't really worked out. So, okay, you know, so they're going back to what seemed to work. It, you know, like I said previous when we were asking about earlier, it makes the other two lines a little bit weaker. I mean, you know, having Lindholm anchor his own line is great, but it makes the first line weaker. So I think it's just sort of a matter of, you know, who do you want the shutdown center, the best offensive or the best player on the other team to focus on? Because, you know, if you have them anchoring in on, you know, the Lindholm line, then that makes it life a little bit easier for Tkachuk. It makes life a little bit easier for Dubé and Bennett and Lucic. You know, there's a ripple effect that sort of allow the Flames matchups to be a little bit easier for everybody else. Granted, you know, you're basically asking, you know, Gaudreau and Monahan to sort of swim upstream against some really good players in the other team, but they've shown the ability when Lindholm's with them that they can, you know, at the very least, you know, break even against the other team's best line, and then it gives you better chances. So I really like Lindholm. I think long-term, he probably ends up being, you know, a guy who plays a bit of center and a bit of wing. It'd be great if they can give him some stability. But, you know, like you said, the team doesn't really have the overall forward depth right now to take him off the right side. Because if you take him off the right side, I mean, you know, who do you got on the right side? Like Mangiapane playing on his off wing, but he probably fits better, you know, on that the 3M line. Simone hasn't worked. Levo hasn't really had much chemistry with those guys. Sam Bennett hasn't really worked. So, you know, they've tried everything else they can, and it hasn't really worked out. And, you know, I think we're going to end up having yet another offseason where, you know, Brad Treliving goes to the market and tries to figure out how to fix the right side, because, you know, they've tried every possible alternative, and Lindholm seems to be the best one.
And I don't know for fact, but I believe you can probably count on one hand the amount of players on this team, especially up front, that shoot right-handed. So the options are just limited, period. And that's not an easy spot to be in if you're the Flames. What would you, I guess a two-part question on Derek Ryan. A, what would you do when he gets back in terms of your line combos? And B, are they just biding time with Glenn Godden until Derek Ryan gets back? Because I believe every single NHL game he's played, he has not even touched 7 minutes of ice time.
Yeah, I think if you're up to me, your fourth line is, I keep the top three lines intact, and then your fourth line is probably, until you can figure out something better, Nordstrom, Derek Ryan, and Josh Levo. You know, they've all been good in limited minutes. And I think, you know, that trio allows you to play them a little bit more. Derek Ryan's shown a lot of versatility. He's a great, you know, he's, I think him and Elias Lindholm are the two most reliable centers in terms of winning faceoffs on the team. And, you know, in short minutes, you kind of need that in the tough minutes at the end of the game. So I think you got to put it in. You know, Glenn Godden, I mean, like Glenn Godden was sort of put into a tough situation because, you know, you come in, you know, both him and Byron Fraze came in, but especially Godden. Godden came in when the team wasn't doing great. And I think his usage sort of skewed a bit more towards road games. So it's been tough for him to really been used a lot. But, you know, I think he's been just fine. And, you know, it'll give him a chance to sort of get his feet wet. I can sort of see what the Flames did with him, similar to how they brought along, you know, Andre Mangiapane sort of saw similar usage. So did, you know, some other guys like Dubé was used that way. So was Rasmus Anderson. The idea of bring a guy up, you put him in sort of limited usage, and, you know, he gets his feet wet. But I think the big value for Gaudin was the fact that he was able to play in the NHL, which he hadn't done before, and not get his doors blown off, and, you know, just sort of soak up the atmosphere. Because I think just from seeing the games, you know, in real time and being able to sort of absorb what's going on, you know, it allowed him to go back to Stockton and be a guy who can really move the needle down there and continue to develop. And, you know, let's be honest, Derek Ryan's on an expiring contract and he's a fourth line center. And I don't think the Calgary Flames with a flat cap can invest $3 million into a fourth line center long term. They're going to have to find a more cost effective option, either Ryan coming back at a discount or someone else taking that role. If you're Glenn Gaudin, you're looking at the UFA list for next year and going, ooh, there's a job opening next year. And potentially it could be Gaudin because, you know, I don't think Gaudin's going to be making much more than he's making this year. He's making league minimum at the NHL level, and maybe he gets a little bit of a raise, but he's not going to break the bank for the Flames. And if you're the Flames, the point isn't to make Glenn Gaudin great right now because you don't need him to be. I think the whole idea, the whole point of the exercise is, okay, he's a Band-Aid solution right now, but hopefully it makes him a guy that can come in October and really take that job by the horns and be a full-timer.
Last one for you. Many people believing that Glenn Gaudin will be bound for the Stockton Heat once Derek Ryan comes back, to your guys' point. Speaking on the Stockton Heat, when we last spoke, they had lost back-to-back games in blowout fashion. The tides have turned a little bit for the Stockton Heat. Well, what did you make of the last few days for the Flames minor league affiliate?
I mean, they're obviously a work in progress, and obviously their focus is more in development, but, you know, they blew the doors off of the Toronto Marlies the last game they played with them. Since we last spoke, they've won both of their games against the Marlies. And, you know, some of the guys that you were hoping to see some offensive outbursts from, we've seen. I mean, you know, Connor Zary had a couple points. Emilio Pettersson got a couple points. You know, Luke Philp has two goals. Pospisil is a point-per-game player. And, you know, the guy who leads the Stockton Heat in scoring right now is 21-year-old Adam Rozicka, who, you know, the Flames brought in to their phase three camp last year. He was eligible to play, but they didn't bring him with them to the bubble. But the whole idea was they wanted, you know, Adam Rozicka to just come in, play with the big boys, and sort of get a sense of how close he is. And, you know, he was kind of quiet in the first couple games against the Marlies, but the last two games, you know, back-to-back three-point nights, and one of them in an absolute rout where the Marlies had no traction whatsoever. And, you know, I think for Rozicka, you know, we were just talking about Glenn Gaudin potentially being a candidate for fourth line center. You know, Adam Rozicka is, you know, he's a left shot, so you probably wish he could learn to shoot the other way. But, you know, he's got everything but a right shot. He's big. He has shown the ability to be a really good two-way player. And, you know, the only knock on him in the junior level after he was drafted was his consistency. And if he's a guy who can put together a couple good months to close out the season and head into the summer, he could be a guy who's a dark horse for an NHL gig because, you know, what's the old saying? You can't teach size. I mean, there's been plenty of guys with a lot less talent than Adam Rozicka has who've gotten countless chances at the NHL because they're big boys. And Rozicka, he's a big boy, but he's also a guy who can play in a lot of different situations. And for a team that the knock on their forward group has been they don't have a lot of depth, they don't have a lot of depth guys that could score, Rozicka is potentially one of those guys that can break the mold.
Pike, awesome as always, man. Thanks for this. We'll chat next week.
Take care, guys.
You too. There is Ryan Pike from FlamesNation.ca joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. There's a big signing in the National Football League. Well, at least the player who signed is big, but we do kind of think that maybe they're blowing it out of proportion in terms of the actual on-the-field effect. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, Peter Klein. They are the big show, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Creeping up to 2 o'clock here on your Calgary Flames game day as the Flames get set to take on the Ottawa Senators. We're getting kind of used to that as Calgary looks to make it back-to-back wins over the Sens, and just doing some reading up on this one today. Want to make sure I have this right. Looking for back-to-back regulation road wins for the first time this season. So can check a couple of boxes for the Flames this evening as they get set for the Ottawa Senators. Just a couple of quick notes here before we get into the NFL conversation. David Rittich will be going between the pipes for the Flames again this evening. Sounds like Jacob Markstrom is close, but not close enough to actually play in this evening's contest. So David Rittich will be checking back in tonight for the Flames. I believe that is five games in a row for him. Big news from the National Football League today. And again, I kind of prefaced this going into the break saying, hey, it is big news from the fact that J.J. Watt is a big human being. But from an on-the-field standpoint, I do feel like sometimes some people are maybe overstating this one a touch, as when people are bringing up, hey, J.J. Watt with Arizona, look out quarterbacks in the NFC West. First of all, they had Aaron Donald, probably needed to look out anyway. Same thing with Nick Bosa. That's not an easy task to deal with. And Arizona themselves had Chandler Jones. And then you see, hey, look, J.J. Watt, most sacks since 2012 or anything like that. And it's like, I get what you're doing, but 2012 J.J. Watt, a whole lot different than 2021 J.J. Watt. And as you just go through this, Will, I think J.J. Watt is still a productive player. I don't think he's a game wrecker anymore. I think he's still productive, but I am stunned by the response on social media that's like, oh, watch out for the Arizona pass rush. It's like, yeah, he'll be a complimentary piece, but I don't think this is a massive game changer in the NFC West now.
It's funny you mentioned that tweet. I saw the exact same one, as they said. Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt, those two players have the most sacks in the NFL since 2012. Okay, well, that's pretty good. You go back and you look at the numbers. Yeah, that's a cherry pick stat, isn't it? Hey, guys. 2012, 13, 14, 15, J.J. Watt had 69, if my quick math, 70 sacks of the 95 and a half in that little chart. So look, I think J.J. Watt is a fine player. I think getting a two-year deal worth $31 million at $23 million guaranteed, yeah, that's probably a little higher than market price of J.J. Watt. But yeah, this is not J.J. Watt of 2012 and 2014 when he's winning Defensive Player of the Year awards and getting 20 sacks a year. This is a guy who has had a ton of injuries. He's 32 years of age. This is not going to, I'm not elevating Arizona into Super Bowl contending status. And I quite frankly still have them as the third best team in that division. They are in the hardest division in football. And I thought the most interesting thing about all of this, Pete, is I was laughing as people were saying, oh, J.J. Watt, I thought he wanted to sign with a contender. Why is he signing with Arizona? Like, what, I don't really understand that one. But, hey, Cardinals get an older defensive player. We've seen that before. And I think he's going to be fine. Don't get me wrong. But he is not going to win Defensive Player of the Year or anything like that next year. I don't see that in the future of a Cardinal uniform.
Yeah, to me, he's a complimentary piece. Like, to me, he is someone who is going to at least draw attention from offensive lines, and you don't get to double up on Chandler Jones as much. Like, he is an attention grabber, but I don't, like you said, like, before this, I thought Arizona was the third best team in that division, and now I think Arizona's the third best team in that division. Like, I think you get a little bit better, but I was stunned at how many people, just massive game changer, watch it. Like, people talking about Russell Wilson, now he really wants an offensive line. Like, I don't know. I think Aaron Donald kind of established that one for him already. So I was surprised at how big people were on this J.J. Watt situation. Just a couple other ones, kind of rapid fire before we get to 2 o'clock and Pat Steinberg. The Toronto Blue Jays play their first spring training game of the season. They're playing their second one right now against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And if you're going to play them, you might as well win. So that's nice that the Blue Jays get a win. But a lot of people talking about Rowdy Tellez coming out of this one. And I think it's actually kind of a big year for him, as this is a Blue Jays team that wants to be flexible with where guys can play. You're not necessarily putting Rowdy Tellez at shortstop. Like, he is someone who is going to be a first baseman and a designated hitter. And that is about it. So to me, this is a big year for Rowdy Tellez to prove to this organization that, all right, if I am going to be worth keeping a spot that is only going to play DH or first base 99% of the time. And so far, so good, I guess. But I do think it's important for him.
Yeah, and I think with the move of Vladdy to first base, it obviously takes away from some of the defensive starts he could have got. He got 18 of them at first base a year ago. So yeah, I think primarily his spot in the Blue Jays lineup is going to be with the DH designation beside his name. But I also think there's a ability to play first base, and I think with the dismissal of Justin Smoak, and as we start to flip the page here, I know Smoak's been gone for a couple of years, but as they try to find that future kind of first base DH type of rotation, I think that's kind of where we're at with Rowdy and Vladdy Jr. I think Rowdy is a perfect candidate to be kind of that guy who maybe spells Vladdy off of first base 30, 35 times a year and plays DH the rest of the time. I absolutely see that as his future. And again, that could all change too, Klein. I think for me, I'm fully out. Like, I don't think third base is in Vladdy's future, but I know that he still believes that. He wants to prove the organization that's still a potential. So if that happens, then all of a sudden the door opens wide open for Rowdy at first base. But yeah, I think this is a huge year for him, especially as this team tries to identify which members are they're going to build around, which members are going to be part of this next core as they turn an eye towards competing for a World Series title. So yeah, this is a huge year for Rowdy. And hey, when you've got a bat that has 30 to 35 home run type power, you want to find a way to get that in your lineup.
Yeah. And I think Vlad physically looks good. Still he is always going to have that, for lack of a better term, thickness, in the leg area, but he scores from second base on a single, the other day, which again, not necessarily setting the highest bar, but that's not something he would do before. In his first days as a Blue Jay, he was getting pinch run for in every seventh inning ever. So I like where Vlad has kind of worked himself to as well. And I'm getting really excited about this Toronto Blue Jays squad, and George Springer makes his debut tomorrow. I'm sure people are going to be very rational about their responses to that.
At DH too. So,
right. Yeah.
Let's start the narrative already that he can't play center field.
Yeah, washed up. Blue Jays get damaged goods. You heard it. You heard it here first. All right. Do want to remind you guys that Logan Gordon is currently sitting in the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Proudly owned and operated from Western Canada since 2008, Iconic take great pride in giving back to the communities we all work and live in. Diversity, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. The Flames back on track? Question mark? Still a number of questions to be asked about this Flames team, including what do you do with the line combinations? We go back to the bubble group. Should that continue? We'll discuss that with Steinberg coming up next.
Live all over Calgary, the big show with Steinberg, Nault, and Klein. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
What a road trip this has been so far for the Flames. It wraps tonight in Ottawa. So 6-3 win over the Sens. That was a good win. 3-0 shutout win over Toronto a week ago. Those are kind of the highs on this road trip. And there was a 7-1 loss to Edmonton to kick it off. Sprinkle in a 6-1 loss to Ottawa. The loss in Toronto, the overtime loss, there were good things and bad things, but the ending, kind of a kick in the gut. But this has pretty much been, if you were to take the 5 of 6 games they've played, and really, regardless of what happens in Game 6 tonight, it really has been a microcosm of this season. Up and down, complete roller coaster, zero consistency. And I thought Saturday was good, exactly what they needed to do. They bounced back. We knew they had to. I think we all kind of were talking during Saturday's game on our group chat that we weren't really surprised that the Flames came out and played the way they did, especially with them going back to the old line combinations. But it was also one game, and we've seen great one-game responses all year long, Will, and I think that's why Saturday's win for you hasn't, as much as there were good performances and lots of offense, so on and so forth, really hasn't moved the needle that much for you.
No, and they played against an Ottawa team who didn't play their best game. Their goaltender certainly didn't play their best game. So, again, we've seen this act before. I've seen it for a 1 or 2-game stretch many times before. I've seen Mark Giordano explode like he did in certain times before. So yeah, by no means does one game where you put up 6 and still allowed 3 against the league's or the division's worst team and the league's bottom, 2 or 3 teams. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you everything's great. And the other part of that is we'll get to it in the latter half of this segment. But, Pete, we talked about it in the first 2 hours. I also have a hard time saying they figured it out because they had to go back to the old hat against a weaker team because they can't do these line combinations necessarily against stronger opponents. They went away from those because they wanted to get the likes of Monahan and Gaudreau in more advantageous matchups. So, yeah, I have a lot of trouble, I think, just really grabbing on to a whole heck of a lot from Saturday's effort. You can change that. You can certainly start pushing the narrative in the other direction by a good performance tonight. But I've seen the one or two game max many times before. In fact, too many to count. So, as I said in hour one, if that seems like I'm an extremely harsh marker today, well, you're darn right I am, because this team has not earned the benefit of the doubt, at least not in my opinion.
No, I am in agreement with you on this one. You said you're facing a team that wasn't playing at their best. And what we said coming in, even if the Ottawa Senators were playing at their best, that shouldn't be much of a hindrance for the Calgary Flames. And
wow,
so,
no
yes,
respect.
They're 7-15-1. I think I'm giving them about
zero
as much respect.
Respect.
As they deserve.
I'm offended. No,
and,
for
and
them.
It's and it's Pat. It's respect. R-E-S-P-E-K.
Yeah.
Respect.
No respect.
Right.
No respect.
Yeah. I'm putting no respect on a team that's currently sitting last in the National Hockey League. And the teams ahead of them all have games in hand.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, Pete. I thought Matt Murray was great on Saturday. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Hmm. Franchise goaltender, Matt Murray. One of the most expensive
84,
signings.
84, baby.
Oof. Yeah, rough one. We weren't going to learn a lot from that game. If it had gone the other way, it would have been an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. And holy crap, I can't even imagine what the show would have been like. So yes, you took care of business in a situation that you were absolutely 1,000% supposed to take care of business in. Now do it again. And do it again. And then, just for kicks and giggles, let's do it one more time after that, shall we? Like, this is the start of, for me, Pat, a long process of getting back to, I guess, kind of buying in to what this team might be selling. Because to you guys' point, we have done this 100 times before where they have a bad outing. They look good against a bad team. I'm not saying problem solved anymore.
Yeah. And I don't think, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think anybody else is either. And that's like, I don't think anybody on
our
text
line.
Well,
we had a couple people text in the first hour and says, "Oh,
really?
Come on, guys, they won." Oh, yeah. So there's absolutely people out there that are saying that.
And that's
absolutely.
That's fair, I guess. I guess here's why I think it's harder for some, including this show, definitely our other local show on the mornings. Like I know why Boomer and Rhett and Pinder are having trouble buying in. I know why Klein and Logo and Will are having trouble buying in, because it's the same reason I'm having trouble buying in. We're not talking, like, at this point, one game and going game to game is hard to do, because we've seen this act so many times. We've seen good, we've seen bad, and it goes back to what we were talking about on Friday. I'm kind of done hearing about how good they can be for one game. They now have to start doing this on a regular basis, playing a similar brand of hockey on a night-in, night-out basis, and then they have to make the playoffs, and then they have to do something in the postseason to start to win us over. That is the situation. Like it or not, that is the situation the Flames are in the big picture. Now, in the small picture, were there good things about Saturday's win? Of course there were, and we're going to get into those in a second. But in the big picture, I don't think Will or Klein or anyone else at this station or anyone else who cheers for this team on the outside, I don't think, hell, I would imagine that inside the front office boardroom and inside that war room, they're like, okay, yeah, show me. I don't think that anybody with the team is ready to say that, yep, that is a turning point, because how many times have we been asking or looking for a turning point this year? So that is why it's not all of a sudden singing the narrative that everything has changed. In saying that, there were definitely some positive things from Saturday, and there were definitely some things to sink your teeth into. But until this team is in a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation, they are in a no-win situation in terms of the court of public opinion. That's the spot that they have put themselves in. And until they have sustained playoff success, Klein, I don't know if that overall big picture narrative is ever going to change, and that might not be fair, mm-hmm. and it might be fair depending on how you look at it, but that's probably the situation that the Flames are sitting in right now.
No, exactly. And just a quick one, and I'm not saying anyone else is saying this, but to the people who are texting in like, oh, we've got to be positive, boys. I'm not telling you to be more negative. I'm just saying like it's not our job to just one win and everything's fantastic. And oh, well, they played well. So now we have to talk positively about everything for 6 hours. That's just not what we're going to do. That's not what this job is. So if you are a fan who wants to do that, by all means, I'm not telling you to sit judgingly at your television as the Flames score 6 against the Ottawa Senators. But as we are looking to break this down, to your point, Pat, we're not going to, this team isn't going to be able to prove anything to us until the second round of the playoffs. And if they do not get to that point, then that is all the evidence that we need. So what we can talk about regular season, we can talk about like try to get back on track and building momentum or any other cliches we want to use, Will. This team is going to be judged on playoff success and playoff failure. And I understand they still have to get there, but at the end of the day, we're not going to, at least I don't want to speak for you, I'm not going to buy into anything really until I see this team do this with only 8 or so teams left in the National Hockey League. Like I can't buy into it during the regular season anymore.
Well, yeah. And I mean, we said this last week, Pat. I think you were the one who asked the question many times. Like, even if this season is salvaged, they make the playoffs, maybe not even as the 4 seed, say they get red hot and, you know, somehow grab a 2 or a 3 seed, like that doesn't do anything for me. Like and that might seem extremely harsh, but we've talked about that before and you've said the same thing. I mean, even if they get this season back on track, does that really mean anything if they're out in 4 games or 5 games in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Because for me, the answer is a hard no. And again, I want to see them take the steps and improve. And I think Saturday was a great step in that direction. And I thought, you know, the guy that we've been most heavily critical on, Mark Giordano, I thought he was great on Saturday. I thought that's exactly what you want to see from a captain. But I'm sorry, against a lame duck team like Ottawa, it's just not going to cut it. And I think that a lot of these questions will be answered in the playoffs and at least certainly give you a more clear picture come playoff time. But the bottom line is, Pat, and the reason why the needle is not going to get moved anytime soon for me, the expectations for this team were not only playoffs, but to be kind of in that top 3 seeds. And right now, through 22 games of the year with 34 left, this team is kind of going to be scratching and crawling just to make the playoffs. So that to me right there should tell you a lot about where, you know, the answers to these questions, should it not?
And I'm having a hard time, and I'm really trying to put myself in both camps because I'm having a hard time separating myself from the bigger picture conversations of this team right now. But at the same time, I understand that you might be listening in your car or at your office or at home right now, and you might absolutely be dialed in and living day to day with this team. So I want to make sure that we're hitting both. And that's why I think that the next conversation we're going to get into is it's going to be a tough one to separate me from the big picture, but I also think there's some really interesting kind of right now, day-to-day important conversations to have with this team. Is hour 2 of the big show is underway. It's Will Nault, it's Peter Klein, it's Pat Steinberg, it's Logan Gordon. Everything coming at you live today from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunications, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Flames finish off a 6-game road trip tonight in Ottawa. 5:00 face-off, 4:00 warm-up right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We know the goaltending matchup will be the same as what we saw the first 2 games of this set. David Rittich for Calgary and Matt Murray for Ottawa. Jacob Markstrom close, but not quite ready to return as of yet, so it will be Rittich for a 5th consecutive time. We're not expecting very many changes for the Flames tonight, but might be a change or two. We'll see when they hit the ice for warm-up in Ottawa. Senators making one change. Brännström out, Coburn in. Otherwise, they will stay the same. So let's dive into the smaller picture conversation. Juggled up the lines, back to last season, back to the bubble. And it does raise a fascinating debate about how this team should be structured. We know that these lines, with Monahan between Gaudreau and Lindholm, with Backlund with Tkachuk and Mangiapane, Bennett, Lucic, and Dubé, we know that these lines can get them to the playoffs. We know these lines can get them a semblance of regular season success. But can they get them anywhere once they're there. And Klein, I don't know how many times we've talked about the conversation about Elias Lindholm, etc. I have been, I remain a staunch believer that Lindholm is this team's best center. But I think that, you know, through 21 games prior to Saturday, what I think we found out and why I think this became something that needed to be put on the table is that the drop-off from right wing without Lindholm there is significantly larger than the drop-off is without Lindholm at center. You've got Monahan, who has one even strength goal all this year. You've got Gaudreau, who has had really good stretches. He's had more quiet stretches. And you want to get two of your most important offensive players going. You maybe want to see if you can reunite a true top line in your eyes. Like, I would imagine, and I know Jeff Ward downplayed it when he spoke to the media today, but I would imagine this wasn't necessarily something they wanted to do, knowing how well Lindholm had played at center. But at the same time, when it has been a dead spot on the right side, I don't think, Klein, I gave enough, or I don't think going into the season anyway, I saw the gap at right wing being so detrimental to this team. 21 games in, it has been a big-time hindrance to them at 5-on-5. I understand why they're doing this.
I do too. And we again, this goes back to the bigger picture, smaller picture conversation we were having, because bigger picture, you're going back to old reliable in a season where old reliable won't really cut it. But smaller picture, this is a team that still needs wins, and this is a team that still needs to get into the postseason. And the issue I am having, because I do agree with you on the right side, center just stacked up so well with Lindholm there. Like, you have Sean Monahan, who has scored a bunch of goals, I think is a good second line center. You ask him to be your number one center, and I push back a little bit. And Backlund, I think at this point, with the inconsistency, although that has been a lot better in the latter part of this season so far, really good third line center. Second line center, yeah, is all right. And with Lindholm at the top, like, it just, again, to steal the Pierre Labardia's term, it just slotted so well. But the right side was a tire fire. And so I think at this point, you do have to make this switch. Long term, Will, I like Elias Lindholm down the middle. But for the Calgary Flames right now, it was clear that was not working. And so that is why, in the short term, I do not mind this decision from the Flames.
Yeah, and I really don't know when or if you can go back to Lindholm down the middle. As much as I loved it, like the two of you, I said it a couple of times before, Pat, when we've had initial conversations of this, and we saw it very first come to light when Dylan Dubé got hurt. This team just isn't deep enough or isn't good enough to have that. And I understand where you're coming from, Klein, because I'm with you. Yes, the center depth looks a lot better when you've got Lindholm as your number one center. But the bottom line is, I said this, you know, that seemed to be kind of that missing piece on the right side in the top six, and they were never able to find that, and so they've had to scrap that. Now, with Derek Ryan getting back and getting closer, getting healthy, I would imagine you'll see him when this team comes back home. And for me, when Derek Ryan's healthy and playing, your center drop-off really isn't too bad, and a lot of that is tied to how well Sam Bennett can play in that number three slot as a centerman. And if he plays well and gives you what you saw in the playoffs, and certainly what we've seen in different stretches this year as a number three center, well, then you're probably a little bit more okay with it. So yeah, long-term, Pat, I don't know if they can ever go back to this unless you completely change the construction of this roster.
Long-term this season is, or long-term beyond this season?
Well, unless you change the way your roster is constructed, I don't know if you can, like, going into next year, if they bring in three new guys at entry level or minimum pay,
they
like,
need, they, I'm
kind
of with you. They need like a, they need a top six to right shot right winger, right? Like they would need another guy that they could confidently put with Monahan and Gaudreau, preferably with a right shot and clearly a top six winger, like Toffoli or whoever it might be. That's the player that they need to be comfortable to do this, right?
Yeah, for me, the bottom line is they don't have enough high-end talent. They don't. They don't have enough players that you can confidently fill your top six with and be okay with. You can argue that they're only missing one piece, sure. But the bottom line is what we've seen this season, I'm sorry, Josh Levo, Dominic Simone, anybody you want to throw at me, they haven't been good enough in that spot.
Toffoli,
that includes Sam Bennett. What's that?
Toffoli would have been a perfect fit.
That would have been perfect. Absolutely.
I know that.
I think long, to answer your question about the short term, long term, Pat, I don't know if they can ever go back to that unless they completely overhaul their roster. So yeah, this is the only move to me that makes sense. And it goes back to the kind of the overarching question of, have you made any progress, period? And if you're going back to old reliable, it's hard to say that you have.
Well, and that's kind of where that's where I have a tough time, guys, with this big picture, small picture conversation, because as much as I was adamant that Lindholm down the middle is what's best for this team, and personally, I still believe that in the big picture, the way it's constructed right now, you're right, Will, it's not working. And this probably, unless it's proven otherwise here in the next 10, 15, 20 games, this probably gives them the best chance to have success in the regular season. My problem is that these lines and these combinations have not gotten it done when it matters the most. Lindholm, Gaudreau, and Monahan have fallen off a cliff in three playoff series, if you want to include Winnipeg. They got completely run over by McKinnon and company against Colorado. And it was, Blake Como and Andrew Cogliano and Corey Perry that were hemming them in and rendering them very ineffective against Dallas. And that's an issue to me. And I know that we rip on Gaudreau and Monahan a lot for their lack of playoff success, and rightfully so in a lot of ways, but it's not like Lindholm has been outstanding in the postseason either. I think he's got 3 playoff points at even strength in his 15 games. So it's that's the thing that worries me in the long term, is that when it matters the most, that line, that trio hasn't gotten it done. In the small picture, though, for them to get there and for them to maybe be in a spot to make an acquisition before the deadline or something like that, I think that 21 games, you gave it a shot. And I, as somebody who is pushing for Lindholm at center and who still believes that is a really viable, important option for this team, even I can say, yep, you know what? They gave it 21 games. Didn't work the way I thought it would. Didn't work the way the team wanted it to. And now you're in a spot where, for the time being, this is probably your best bet. So it really is, Will, that big picture, small picture conversation, which is tough to really plant yourself on either one side of that convo.
Yeah, and I mean, it's and that's why I'm having trouble saying that there's been progress or steps made, because you're going back to old hat, and we haven't seen this work in the past. So, and I said this in hour one to Klein, and I'll bounce it off you too, Pat. I mean, and again, this just seems like we're trashing on Ottawa this segment, but like, are you confident these combinations are working against a Toronto or an Edmonton or a Montreal?
I want to see him try anyway.
Yeah, we want to see it tried. And until we see that, we can't really answer that. But that's the test. And that's when you find out if there's been any progress made. But man, it's I guess making this decision now to go back to these is better than doing it in game 32 or game 40. But yeah, it just kind of also makes you wonder, like, okay, I understand you wanted to try Lindholm down the middle, but if you had preseason, maybe it's a different story because you would have been able to see it. But I just wonder at the same time, Pat, what took you to game 23 to do it?
Yeah. Wow. Right. And Klein, to that point, I think there was definitely a worthy case to be made about giving Lindholm an extended run down the middle. And I think, you know, I don't think this is a case where you can come away saying that they didn't give it a proper run. And I still think there is plenty of conversation to be had about giving it more run. Hell, maybe even this season, we'll see. But for the time being, you gave it a run. It wasn't because of anything Lindholm did, because he was great in that spot. It was more about what wasn't working elsewhere and more about some drop-off in some other spots.
Yeah, and more about like what you weren't getting, because at the beginning of the year, we were talking about those pairs, and you see, okay, Tkachuk and Lindholm, that is a fine pair, but then there were stretches where Tkachuk wasn't getting going, and then whoever you would put there, Dylan Dubé was really fighting it to start the season, and then with Gaudreau and Monahan, it's all right, let's try Dominic Simone, and you barely noticed him, and it just went on down the line, and just some of the things that were brought in to kind of plug the holes weren't necessarily working, and so now I understand what Will's saying, like, why did it take so long? But there was enough going just right enough that maybe you could talk yourself into it. But now, I do think, guys, that this kind of speaks to the desperation of the situation that the Flames are in. 34 games remaining, sitting outside of a playoff spot, no matter which column you sort by, whether it's points or points percentage, they are not in it. And Montreal is the team they are chasing, and the Habs have games in hand on the Flames right now. Like, we are getting, this is, even in a regular season, if there's 34 games left, that is the stretch run. Like, it's getting very serious. And yeah. So I do think that this kind of speaks to the urgency of the situation the Flames are in right now, Pat.
Last word to you, Will, before we wrap and throw it a break.
I honestly don't have a ton to add. We'll see what these combos bring tonight, and we'll see if perhaps they can string two together. But I do agree that there was enough to keep those lines going for as long as they did. But I do think there's a sense of, at least from me, a sense of, well, it kind of failed, and you kind of feel like, you know, those days where you get knocked down a couple of rungs on the ladder. That's what it kind of feels like to me.
It'll be Monahan between Gaudreau and Lindholm once again as to what we're expecting. 3M line, Bennett with Lucic, Dubé. That's what we're expecting to drop the puck in Ottawa tonight. 5 o'clock faceoff right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, 6-3 was the score on Saturday afternoon. That's the subject of today's ATB Brightside Flames Roundup. It's on Twitter and Facebook at Sportsnet 960 and up at sportsnet.ca/960. Every Monday and Friday, the Flames Roundup highlights right to your device. Brought to you by Brightside by ATB. A new banking app to help you spend and save for what you love. Let's keep the Flames talk going around the corner. Derek Wills chimes in. Daily Flames Roundtable's next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. If you drive a 2017 or newer vehicle, their enhanced process allows higher than average appraisals. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the Calgary airport.
All right, the crazy roller coaster ride that has been the Flames season took another swing, this time an upswing on Saturday afternoon. 6-3 win in our nation's capital to bounce back from a 6-1 loss on Thursday. And now third consecutive game for the Flames against the Senators as we welcome you back to the program. It's Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, and now the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our daily Flames roundtable. In that 6-3 win on Saturday afternoon, Flames went back to their bubble lines from the summertime, including Elias Lindholm on the right side with Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, Michael Backlund back with Mangiapane and Tkachuk, and Sam Bennett back between Milan Lucic and Dylan Dubé. They tried something else for 21 games. They really tried to give a run for Elias Lindholm down the middle for those first 21 games, but went back to old reliable on Saturday. Is this the best thing for the team for the rest of the season?
Well, right now it's the best thing for the team, in my opinion. As for the rest of the season, it's difficult to say, Pat, because what have I been saying since the offseason when talking about moving Elias Lindholm from center to right wing? That, sure, go ahead and do it, but center is arguably your deepest position, and right wing is definitely your shallowest position. And that's kind of how it's played out. You know, during the offseason, they brought in Josh Levo and Dominic Simal, hoping one or both of them could play top 6 minutes. And to this point, they haven't been able to do that. Let me ask you guys this question. How many top nine right wingers do the Flames have on their roster?
True right wingers, probably one.
And who's that?
Elias Lindholm.
Right. And his natural position is center. But yeah, as I've said 1,000 times, he's their number one centerman and he's their number one right winger. Because Andrew Mangiapane really is the only player who has been put on the right side of a top two line this season and done enough to stay there. Sam Bennett's been good at times. Dylan Dubé's been good at times. I think you guys would agree we haven't seen enough from Josh Levo and Dominic Simal really at any time. So it for me just comes back to, do I think Elias Lindholm is their number one centerman? Yes. Do I think he should be there long term? Yeah, once they add some pieces on the right side, whether they do that internally through growth or externally by making a trade or via free agency, right now I just don't think they have enough on the right side to move their best right winger to center, or I guess in this case to leave their best right winger at center, because even without Elias Lindholm up the middle, guys, you've still got Sean Monahan, Michael Backlund, Sam Bennett, and hopefully sometime soon, Derek Ryan. I like the Flames 1-4 at center. Can they win a Stanley Cup with Sean Monahan as their number one centerman and Michael Backlund as their number two guy? maybe not. We certainly haven't seen evidence of that to this point in their careers. But what I know is that they just don't have enough on the right side right now to leave Lindholm at center. And I think Jeff Ward did the right thing putting those bubble lines back together on Saturday, and it helped the Flames in a 6-3 win.
To dumb down your question, Pat, I mean, I don't think this team has a lot of cap space to be going and acquiring anybody, certainly not anyone that would be on the top six on the right side. I've said it before. I think they certainly need an elite right shot forward, but they don't have one, and I don't know if one's available. So to answer your question, I think that, yes, this is probably the best way to go for the rest of the season, and that's because for the first half of the year, I haven't seen it from Levo or Simone or even Bennett when he's been in that spot. Bennett has been better suited as the team's number three center with Dubé and Lucic. So, yeah, I think to answer your question and to really dumb it down and simplify it, I don't know if they have any other choice, Pat, in terms of best course action from now to the end of the season. I think this is the best that they can do because we've seen the other way. Yes, only a 22 or 23 game sample, but it's 500 hockey and at times been worse than that. So you got to go back to at least what works for you in the regular season.
Yeah, it's a big picture, small picture thing. I mean, as it stands right now, yeah, this is probably the best way to go. And until it's proven that it doesn't work all of a sudden, or if it starts to go really stagnant, maybe you do make some changes. But I mean, for me, you know how staunch and how adamant I was on the idea of Lindholm playing center. And I remain very adamant that he is their best chance to have a number one center. And I don't think they're truly going anywhere until they have that. And I do think that window is starting to close a little bit. Not slam shut, but I do think it's been wide open and maybe now starting to come down a little bit. And I think that they need a number one center if they're ever going to truly get to where they want to be. In saying that, you tried. I just, to the point that you had been making going all the way back to the summertime, Derek, I didn't think the drop-off at right wing would be as detrimental without Lindholm there as it has turned out to be. And I think that what we've seen right now, and kind of to drive home your point, is that the drop-off on the right side without Lindholm is far bigger and far more detrimental than the drop-off without Lindholm playing center. And that's kind of what it comes down to. And if they want to have a shot of making a big acquisition that can push them over the top of the trade deadline, they probably do have to go back to this for the time being. And if they want to get to the playoffs and see if Monahan centering a top line can get over and maybe change the narrative, they got to get there. So I get it. It's disappointing in a lot of ways. I don't think it's the wrong decision, but it's disappointing that Levo and Simone or Bennett or whoever you want to talk about hasn't been able to step in and truly play that role on the right side with Monahan and Gaudreau. But, I mean, look, Monahan's got one 5-on-5 goal this year. You need more at 5-on-5 from both him and Gaudreau, and I think you're going to get that with Lindholm back with that line. So it's not necessarily the desired decision, but I do think it is the best decision as things stand right now.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is, guys, they just need more right wingers, like legitimate right shot right wingers, or at least guys who have spent the majority of their career playing on right wing to put in their tops.
Did we lose Derek?
Even Andrew Mangiapane, who certainly deserves to be in
the... I'm going to jump in, Derek. If you can reconnect, you sound like you're being
sounds
run
like
over
a robot.
By a tractor. A robot being run over by a tractor. Why don't you quickly pick up on that, Will? Or I can switch it up to the next topic if you're done, and we'll reconnect with Derek in just a second.
Yeah, I may as well. Here's we go to the next one.
It is robot Derek Wills, Will Nault, and Pat Steinberg along with you on our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. Derek's back. Pick up on what you're saying there, Derek. As we've got you back and you are less robotic now.
Yeah. Did the aliens abduct me again?
Yes, and they were probing.
Didn't
you.
Feel a thing. Yeah, I didn't feel a thing again. I'm just
very graphic. Pat.
Circling back to what I was saying earlier is that I just think that, yeah, while Elias Lindholm is your best centerman, he's also your best right winger. And when you look at who they've tried to play a top six role on the right side, it's, with the exception of Lindholm, been all centermen or left wingers. Mm-hmm. You know, Andrew Mangiapane's been really good in the top six. He's a left winger. Sam Bennett's a left winger. Dylan Dubé is a centerman or a left winger. So, you know, I think ideally, if everything had gone according to plan for Brad Treleving and Jeff Ward, one of or both of Josh Levo or Dominic Simon would have been able to step into a role playing in the right side in the top six. But to this point in the season, that hasn't happened. You know what would solve all of the Flames' problems, guys? If they traded for Jack Eichel and then just moved Elias Lindholm to the right side of his line permanently.
That would.
So if you guys can make that happen.
I tried my best on Friday. I really did. I tried my best on Friday. So I know. We'll see. Derek Wills, Will Nault, Pat Steinberg, Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. So we know they made the line changes, which obviously was a big difference. But outside of that, what was the biggest difference from a 6-1 loss Thursday into a 6-3 win Saturday against the same opponent?
They were just way better in every way, shape, and form. I mean, mentally and physically. And I'm not making an excuse with what I'm about to say, because I don't think there's any way to excuse a 6-1 loss to the worst team in the league, at least point and point percentage wise. I don't think they're the team with the least amount of talent in the league. After watching the Red Wings last night, I think they can probably lay claim to that. But they just didn't look as tired as they did in the first of four straight games against the Senators on Thursday night. They had played 5 games in 7 nights. And again, I'm not making excuses, because you can't excuse what they did do and didn't do in a 5-goal loss to the Senators on Thursday. But they looked like a refreshed team on Saturday, got off to a great start, which, as we all know, has been a real challenge for this team. So scoring a couple of early goals and you know, giving them a chance to play with the lead instead of chasing like they've been doing for most of the season was really important. 5-on-5, I really liked their game. The only 3 goals they gave up on Saturday afternoon were all on the penalty kill, which I guess is probably a topic for another day. But their details were just way better. They looked way sharper to me. You know, they had a hard time breaking out of their zone on Thursday night. And, you know, they came out clean, and that's not just on the defensemen. It certainly is on them, but also on the forwards to make sure that they're doing what they need to do to help the defensemen come out of the zone and get through the neutral zone with some speed. And I liked kind of the jump they had in their step on Saturday afternoon. And again, scoring an early goal, I think, helps. And I had a great chat with the captain before Saturday's game and asked him, you know, as far as I'm concerned, some pretty hard hitting questions. And he gave me some very honest answers. And what was great to see, and I think a lot of you, if you weren't watching the game on television, might have saw it in the highlights a little bit later on, but the captain was pretty animated before Saturday afternoon's game. You know, he looked like he was ready to go. And I think that when your leader has that mindset, it's easy to follow in his lead. So lots to like for me on Saturday afternoon. How about you guys?
I think the last part you just said is exactly what I was going to say, and that's pretty much all I need to say. Because I, quite frankly, Pat, I don't think the Sens were very good on Saturday. I don't think Matt Murray was very good. But, hey, they took advantage, and you're playing the teams in front of you, and that's all the Calgary Flames can do. But for me, you asked the biggest difference from Thursday and Saturday. They had an engaged captain. They had a guy who was ready to lead that team, and they showed the clips from the warm-up on the TV broadcast. He was screaming at guys. He, for the first time in my life, I'm sure it's happened before, but he looked like he was pissed off, like he was ready to at least change or do something. And I thought he went out and had one of his better games on top of all that. So for me, you asked the biggest difference, and my response is they had an engaged captain. And I don't know how many times we've seen that this year.
I think there's a lot of things different. Even if you throw the opposition out the window, I thought that they were a little bit more of a ticked off bunch. You could see that right from the get go. I think the captain was a big part of that, but I don't think he was alone in that. They scored early and they played with a lead for 56 straight minutes after trailing basically the entire time on Thursday. And this team has had a real issue in games of responding positively to adversity this season. And that's something that definitely needs to change. That's something that you don't want to continue. However, on the bright side, they've also done a pretty good job when they've been leading. And they've done a good job of being able to control games and swing them in their favor when they have a lead. And they just haven't had enough of those leads this year. But they scored early, and I think that was a product of them being engaged. I don't think the Senators were ready to play, and the Flames took full advantage of it because they were ready to play. They did start on time. And to me, that's where it all started, Derek, is the fact that right from puck drop, they were ready to go, as they should have been. They got punched in the mouth on Thursday, and they did start on time, which is great for one game. We need to see it more. We need to see them do that on a regular basis. But yeah, that would be the biggest difference, is just like right from the get-go, right from puck drop, they were dialed in, they were engaged, they were urgent, and there was a feeling that this is a huge game for them, regardless of who the opponent is. It's just that hasn't been there enough this season. It was definitely there, though, on Saturday, and it was a big reason why you never got the feeling at any point on Saturday they were going to lose.
Yeah, and I'm glad you guys picked up on the Mark Giordano stuff as well, because it's just different than what we've seen from him in the past. And one of the questions that I asked him, and Pat, I'm not sure if we've had a chance to post the interview, but you know, for those who didn't hear it prior to Saturday's game, if we can post it, I'd really recommend that you have a listen to what the captain had to say. But one of the questions I asked him was, you know, for 900 plus games and long before the C was on your chest, you know, the hockey world has watched you lead by example on the ice. But what can you do as the captain of this hockey club to lead this team to a better place off the ice? And, you know, he was standing on the ice when he was vocal, but I'm guessing he was probably the same way inside of the dressing room before Saturday's matinee matchup. So good on Mark Giordano for maybe getting out of his comfort zone a little bit and doing what he had to do to get his team fired up and getting himself fired up to play. And, you know, the other thing for the Flames is they've struggled to score this season. And I know that 2018, 2019 was an anomaly for this team, but you know, goals came pretty easy for this group 2 years ago. And then look at how frustrated guys got when they were a lot harder to score last season. Well, they've been hard to score again this season. Mm-hmm. You know, the Flames prior to Saturday had scored one goal in five of their previous six games and had scored eight goals total in those six games. So to get six goals and for a number of their top players to get off the schneid offensively, that's going to be a real shot in the arm for them confidence-wise. And again, it's one game, and it's against the team that's at the bottom of the standings, not only in the North Division, but in the National Hockey League. So you take what you saw on Saturday with a grain of salt. But I'll finish this thought here. You've got to start somewhere. And I think that was a good place for the Flames to start. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mr. Wills, get here safely. We will see you in a couple of hours. Puck drop at 5 o'clock tonight. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys, we'll see you soon.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Visit mbcountryhills.ca to see current offers on all of the heart-pumping Mercedes-AMG models. Or visit them minutes from the Calgary airport.
Jerome McGinley in the spotlight with a couple of huge milestones up next. Stay tuned for this date in Flames history on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames History starts now.
Today in Flames History, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Wild Rose Brewery offers premium Alberta-brewed craft beer across our province and at their hangar in the Curry Barracks off Crowchild Trail.
All right, we've got four feature pieces on this date in Flames History today. March 1st. The only way I know what date it is by doing this segment every day. March 1st, 1997 is where we will start, as Jerome McGinley hit a mark that we would come to expect on a regular basis for the first time. He hit the 20-goal mark for the first time in his career as the Flames beat the Dallas Stars 4-1 in 1997. He'd go on to score 20 or more 17 different times in his Hall of Fame career. Aguinla also had his 21st of the year, which would end up being his final goal of the season. Aguinla would go goalless for the rest of the season, went 17 straight games without a goal after March 1st, 1997. So that's one of two Jerome McGinley milestones. And that was a significant one. Even more significant was on this date in 2009. We go back 12 years ago as the Flames fell 8-6 to Tampa Bay. By recording 5 points for the second and final time in his career, Aguinla would hit a pair of massive milestones with an assist on a second-period goal from Craig Conroy. Aguinla would record his 831st point, moving past Theo Fleury for the most in franchise history. Aguinla would, of course, finish his time in Calgary with 1,095 points. Then, 14 seconds into the third period, Aguinla would also score his 400th career goal, becoming the first player in Flames history to hit that mark. He finished his time in Calgary with a team record 525 goals. Not a whole lot more to say about Jerome McGinley. I think we all know where he stands in Calgary Flames lore, but on this date, hits 20 goals for the first time in 1997, becomes the all-time leading scorer on this date in 2009, also scoring his 400th career goal. On a less fun note, let's take you back to 1992. 29 years ago today, the Flames set an unfortunate franchise record, losing 11-0 to the Canucks, which set a record that still stands today for largest losing margin in team history. Sergio Mimeso led the way for Vancouver. He had 2 goals and 4 points. Flames also allowed 6 power play goals, which is a team record as well. So not so good on this date in 1992. And finally, in terms of feature pieces, Curtis Joseph in the spotlight as the Flames beat the Phoenix Coyotes 3-1 on this date in 2008. Joseph made 16 saves to pick up his 448th career win, which moved him past Terry Sawchuk into fourth all-time in NHL history. He has since been passed, but at the time moved him into fourth. Joseph finished his NHL career with 454 career victories, 3 coming in his time with Calgary. Will, just 3 victories in a Flames uniform for Curtis Joseph. It was not his longest stint. It was probably the strangest stint of his NHL career.
I was in high school the day he signed. I remember sitting around the table in the cafeteria with some buddies, and everyone was like, whoa, what? Curtis Joseph just signed with the Flames? Came at a random time, obviously, just after that Spengler Cup. But yeah, it was a short tenure. But one that I think a lot of people remember, obviously, for the namesake. But then you go to the playoffs and the fact that he's relieving Kiprasov in a Game 7. Yeah, it's certainly something that a lot of people remember, even though it was a short stint, kind of like Mike Commodore's 19-game stint in 2004.
Pretty cool. Rob Kerr still tells the story of when Curtis Joseph got here and how big that media scrum was his first time.
I imagine.
Pretty big deal. Nonetheless, not the greatest Flames career, but he did hit a career mark and moved into fourth all-time on this date in 2008.
How long was he out of the league? Sorry, Pat, put you on the spot. How long was he out of the league?
I think it was just over or just under a year. He hadn't played at all that season.
But he was in the league the year before, right?
Yes. Yeah. But he signed in January after the Spengler Cup. So he went to the Spengler Cup, which was his first action of the year, and then got some time with the Flames after that. So he was probably out of the league for about 6 months when it was all said and done. Okay. Maybe a little bit more than that, but 8 months when it was all said and done. Couple of quick hitters for you. Kerry Wilson scored his first NHL goal. Flames beat the Flyers 5-1 this date in 1984. 1 year later, Paul Reinhardt hit the 20-goal mark for the only time in his career. Flames beat the Habs 6-4. Let's move ahead to 2012.
As the Flames killing off some time in the penalty to Brody, he sits for another minute and 25 seconds. Flames into the offensive zone. Lindcross left circle shooting. Scores! Curtis Lindcross, a shorthanded goal, and the Flames have themselves a 2-0 lead here in the first period.
Curtis Lindcross scored his 20th goal as the Flames beat the Arizona Coyotes 4-2, second straight season with 20 or more goals for Lindcross. The only 2 times in his career he would hit 20. He'd finish that season with a career-high 26. 2 years later, in Sean Monahan's rookie year in 2014.
As the puck on the right wing boards, passing it back to the blue line, taken there by Schmid. He knocks the puck ahead. Goes in behind the Edmonton net. Byron, a pass in front. Monahan shoots, scores! Sean Monahan ends it, and the Flames win in overtime. 2-1 on Monahan's second goal of the game.
And first career overtime winner. He scored a bunch of those since. Sean Monahan's first career OT winner helped the Flames to a 2-1 win over Edmonton. He'd score his 17th and 18th of the season in 2014. In 2016, Jakob Nakladal scored his first career NHL goal. Flames fell 2-1 to Boston. And on this date, 1 year ago.
And the final few seconds will come off the clock. And Cam Talbot with a 37-save shutout. And the Flames get goals from Johnny Gaudreau, Milan Lucic, and TJ Brody as they wrap up this 5-game, 9-day road trip with a 3-1-1 record and 7 of a possible 10 points following a 3-0 shutout victory over the Panthers in Florida.
38 saves for Cam Talbot in the shutout. What's crazy about this one, Klein, I saw you tweeted earlier today. 1 year ago today, you returned and touched back down in Canada after 2 weeks in Japan on your honeymoon. On the same date, the Flames take a 3-0 shutout win in Florida. That would be their final road game of the season. They would return home, play 3 games, and the season was canceled. March 1st, 2020. I think we knew something was up, but I don't think we knew how big a deal it was going to turn into in a week and a half.
Right, yeah, it's interesting. That was the Flames' last road trip. That was basically my last road trip, too, as I've been stuck at home ever since.
I took a road. Yes, you've taken road trips to Canmore and Banff?
Yes,
like actual
true.
Road trips?
Yeah, but hey, he's also gone like 2 week periods of never leaving his 600-foot apartment. So let's not act like Klein's a world
Walk
traveler
schmuck.
Here.
Yeah, it's in the 900s, A. But yeah, no, it's interesting just how quickly things fell off after that. And at this time, it was still blissful ignorance that we were all living with.
No kidding. That was the final road trip and final road game of the pandemic shortened season last year on this
day
in 2020.
Just on Klein's note there about the ignorance, like remember that around this time last year, it was, okay, no more media in the locker room, interviews outside. Like, just so naive to think it was never going to come. But, hey, everyone was in that same thought, myself included. But I remember we started to get the amendments to the NHL media guide and what we could and couldn't do. And it was about this time where locker rooms were officially off access.
Yep. Weird, weird time as the world was changing in front of our very eyes. And finally, two trades on this date. Flames sent Curtis Glencross to Washington for a second and third round pick on this date in 2015. Glencross had requested a trade earlier in the year. And on this date in 2017, Flames acquired forward Curtis Lazar and defenseman Mike Koska from Ottawa in exchange for defenseman Jyrki Jokapäkä and a 2017 second round pick. Ottawa would select Alex Formanton with that second round pick. So two trades on this date as well. There you go. The March 1st edition, this date in Flames history.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Wild Rose Brewery offers premium Alberta brewed craft beer across our province and at their hangar in the Curry Barracks off Crowchild Trail.
We nearly had a trade in the NHL over the weekend, but now it looks like it's not going to happen. Elliot Friedman up next with that and a whole lot more as we continue around the corner. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show talks hockey right now with NHL insider Elliot Friedman. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Lost your keys? Calgary Lock & Safe can rekey or recode your locks. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Hour three of the program underway. Final hour of the program. We got Flames warm up at the top of the hour. But right now, we say hello to Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. Hello, Mr. Friedman. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Paul. Pat, thank you very much for being patient with me. The wind blew my recycling bin all over my driveway. I had to go collect it.
Everything's okay? You've got everything picked up now?
Yes, the paper bags and everything else, the various plastics, they are safe and sound back in the bin.
That is what's most important. I am glad to hear. Let's start talking a little trade because everybody was all around it. It looked like Vancouver and Anaheim were minutes away from making a deal over the weekend. Vertanen to Anaheim, Heinen to Vancouver. You reported on Saturday headlines, though, that that's leaning towards the unlikely side. Where are we now on that potential trade?
Yeah, I think we all got kind of carried away on Saturday with that one. I don't think it was even that close. I have to tell you, Pat, that, you know, I think I first mentioned on Tuesday last week that I heard Vertanen to the Ducks and they were trying to work it out. But if you look at the situation, Vertanen is $1 million less than Heinen this year. And while Heinen doesn't have a contract next year, Vertanen's at 3.4. Like, that's cash, not cap. That's cash. And I just don't – I think the two teams are like dollar for dollar. They want dollar for dollar. And, you know, they couldn't get it there. I was told it was never a one-for-one deal, that they were talking about other players. You know, one of the players I think that Anaheim might have talked about in there was Derek Grant. That was one rumbling I'd heard. But, you know, it wasn't anything that the two sides could agree on. So – like, they may try again. They obviously have tried several times over the past week. But on Saturday, I just heard people weren't very optimistic.
Okay. What is your gauge on how much interest exists specifically in Vertanen around the league right now?
On who are you talking about?
On Vertanen.
That second year is really tough. That 3.4 next year is a real challenge. Like, you know, Pat, one of the things that's going on right now is there just isn't, you know, like, there aren't a lot of teams that are willing to take on money. It's a real buyer's market. There's a lot of sellers. There's a lot of teams that don't think they've got a chance or they want to move cash. But, you know, how many teams out there do you really think want to take on cash? Yeah. Not very many. And so, that's the thing right now. Like, you know, Bertan and 3.4 for next year, that's causing a problem.
Yeah, understandably. So what does the trade market look like around the league right now? How much talk is there? How much has the world we're living in kind of made trade talk a whole lot less right now?
You know, last weekend, I got to tell you, like, to me, it was like a whole lot of, like, just like a lot, like, in all my calls around, I couldn't find a time. Like, I really even struggled to make up something that was good. You know, I think there's a lot of talk now. We're starting to see some more separation. I think there's some teams looking at the math and saying, all right, like, it's not good for us. And I think the moment you realize it's not good for you, you want to see if you can shed salary. But, you know, like I said, Pat, there's a lot of teams that don't want to take on money. And yep. The Canadian border adds another level to this. I mean, there are the teams there, the seven teams in this country, they know if they bring someone in, it's a while. So you're talking about playing shorthanded in terms of what you deal and what you get. So I think right now it's a real grind. I think there's a lot of players out there that, like, I saw a lot of rumblings about, say, Brandon Sutter for this weekend. Like, I like Brandon Sutter. Do I think his number's too high? Yes, but as a player, I like him. And the problem is that, you know, how many Brandon Sutter-like players are going to be out there? So the teams that are actually taking on money, they can afford to be picky and choosy and say, you know, we'll wait till either the perfect player we want or the least return we can give up. Now, there's some other guys, if they come out there, where you know that if they get dealt, you're going to understand it. Like, if Philip Forsberg gets traded, you're going to look at that deal and you're going to say, okay, I get it. If, and I stress this is an if, Jack Eichel gets traded, I assume we're going to look at that deal and say, okay, I get it. But I think there's going to be a lot of guys out there and a lot of teams out there that are going to say, boy, we're not getting a lot of bites that we want. And I think you guys kind of went through that with Bennett.
Right.
I just don't think you guys were getting the bites you wanted.
Elliot Friedman's with us from Hockey Night. Well, let me ask you about those two guys. First of all, on the Eichel front, I know he's missed a few games due to injury. When he first got held out, there was a little bit of hysteria. Like, oh, my goodness, are they trading Eichel? Turns out he was hurt. But what are you hearing about his immediate future in Buffalo and between now and the end of this season?
You know, like, I got to be careful with this one. I don't think he's asked for a trade. You know, last summer, there was something going on around him, and, you know, I don't know that he ever asked for a trade, but I think they knew he was unhappy. And they went and they solicited offers, and the Sabres decided at the end, we're not ready to do this. You know, I think the Rangers were there, and I'm sure there were others, but they just said, you know, we're not ready to do this. Now, right now, look, like, Buffalo has to know where this is headed. If he was not happy last year, is he going to be any happier this year? And the way it's going, the answer's got to be no. So the question is, how are they going to handle this? You know, I think the thing is, like, are you, if you do it now, can you make your best deal? Or are you smarter to wait until after the season when everybody knows what their contract statuses are, when teams are going to have the 10% bonus cushion to use, like, all of that stuff? And, like, I think they're, like, I said this last week or 2 weeks ago in Buffalo, I think there are teams like the Rangers and Kings who could do it now.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the biggest question is, what does Buffalo want here? You know, what do they think? You know, they just had a horrible weekend. I don't think you should make this kind of a trade when you're emotional. I think you should try to create the biggest auction you can try to create and then just go from there. So I think that's eventually what they're going to do.
And then Philip Forsberg, who is fascinating, is there a market there right now, or is that a similar situation to Eichel and maybe wait till the off season?
I think that Nashville, at the very least, what they've done is they've kind of let everybody know this is where we are. And if you're serious, come talk to us. And I think there are a lot of teams talking to them. I think there are a lot of teams, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but I think teams that are interested in adding or really think they've got a chance or are really interested in one of those players. Like, I think they're kind of fielding the market and kind of seeing and creating or kind of create and see what exactly the market is. So, like, I don't know for sure that Forsberg is going to get dealt, but I think Nashville knows who's interested.
Elliot Friedman's with us every Monday on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Ask you a few others, and I do have to ask you about, because you talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the 31 Thoughts podcast with Jeff Merrick, and it was a story then, and it remains a story now. Patrick Kane scores his 400th last night. Hawks beat the Red Wings, and Chicago's sitting there right now in a playoff spot, yep. Comfortably in a playoff spot. Not a whole lot was expected of Chicago this year, and yet here they are. I know so much focus on the Canadian division this year, but how good has Chicago been, and how good a story is this?
Well, it's pretty impressive. It's really incredible. Like, I don't think they expected it. Like, they may say they did, but I refuse to believe it. You know, Patrick Kane, he's in the MVP conversation now.
Absolutely.
You know, you look at it, I think you've got Matthews there. I think you've got McDavid there. I think you've got McKinnon there. And now I think Patrick Kane is very much in there. And if Chicago makes the playoffs, it's going to be tough to vote against them. You know, I'm surprised. You know, I'm surprised. Obviously, Lankinen, I had no idea. You know, the Suter, the Kershaw, the Russian player. You know, like, there are guys here I never imagined that would have the impact that they've had this year. You know, the thing about that division is there's a real spread, eh? Like, you look at the top and bottom of that division. You know, Detroit, you know, we know what we expected of Detroit. The math is really not good for Nashville. The math is not good for Columbus. And the math is suddenly getting really ugly for Dallas. Now, they're a 500 team. But because of the games they've played, they're less than everybody else, and they've got a hellish schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that they're pretty beaten up. Like Hintz is kind of in and out. Like, I think they got some guys really playing hurt there. Like, all of a sudden, you're looking at the top four teams. You know, I mean, we all know how good Tampa is, and I think Carolina's pretty good. And you look at the headway that Florida and Chicago's made. The math itself is going to make it hard. So I agree with you. I think it's a fascinating story.
What is the latest on the NHL draft right now? And kind of fill us in as to why the scheduled time frame in late July isn't necessarily what NHL teams are hoping for.
Well, you know, I really think that, you know, I just look at it right now, and I think it's the head and the heart, right, Pat? Mm-hmm. The head says it's not going to happen, and I wrote that last week. They're not going to end up moving it. There are too many issues that are problematic, including the rights of the players. Like, for example, if an 18-year-old's drafted out of the CHL, he goes back into the draft as long as he's not older than 20 if he doesn't get signed in 2 years. And, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, if he gets drafted in December or he gets drafted in a year from now, you're going to say, okay, well, you still got to wait 2 years. We don't care if you're 21. Or they're going to say, you know what, you only get a year and a year and a half, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. And, like, all of these things are a problem. Like, I heard what happened was the Players Association said, if you want to do this, here's a list of 12 or 13 things that we're going to need or need to be addressed. And, I think after everything they've had to do with the protocols and the and the CBAs and the MOUs, like, I just don't know if everybody has a lot of steam for this particular fight or this mm-hmm. particular challenge. Now, I wrote that, and I got a call from someone, Pat, and they told me that, you know, all of that stuff is right, but what about what's best for the game? And this is the heart of the argument, right? You know, there are people who believe really strongly, and it's the teams and it's the players and a lot of the agents, that the right thing to do is to postpone the draft, whether you move it to next December or January, or then you move and then or you move both of them to next June. They feel it is wrong to make the teams do this, and they are passionate about it. A lot of this is the same group of people when the NHL wanted to do the draft last year, that originally or in June,
right?
They fought it and they said, don't do it. So they're like, I don't know. Like, I hear it's going to be really tough, Pat, but I think these teams are really passionate about the right thing for the game is to move it.
And the reason for that is just because there hasn't been enough viewing for a good chunk of the draft eligible prospects. Is that basically at the crux of why they are wanting to push it and not do it in July?
Absolutely. I mean, right now you've got players that haven't been scouted. It's like they're being scouted on year old tape video.
Yeah.
You know, like, as you know, out there, the Western Hockey League's got pockets up and going, but you know, BC's not going, and Ontario, it's not going to happen until April at the earliest. It sucks. It sucks for these kids, and you know, the teams are just like, it's not right. And but I don't know who's going to win this one, the head or the heart, although the heart is certainly pushing.
And final thought for you. You did an admirable job trying to explain this on Saturday. Tell us what NBA...
Oh, there's going to be more coming tomorrow in the blog.
Is there?
I spent way too much time on this, by the way.
So, NBA Top Shot. Tell us what that is. Tell us why it's relevant to the NHL. And tell us why it is so difficult for Elliot to explain.
Well, you know, I'm not heavily into the world of blockchain and crypto, although I've learned a ton about it in the last 72 hours. And, you know, basically the big picture is like the Top Shot. Okay, so if you're a card collector, this is basically card collecting for the next generation, except or the new evolution of it, except there's no cards. It's all highlights. And, you know, right now you can go on YouTube, for example, and get those highlights for free. But there is a company here, it's based in Vancouver, it's called Dapper Labs, and they've found a way to monetize them. They create what's called moments, and there's a limited number of them, just like cards, and you sell them. And they've made a deal with the NBA and the Players Association there a couple years ago. And, for example, every time a moment is sold, the company gets 5% of the sale, and the NBA gets a piece of that. And the difference here, and what it is, and there's a lot of people who say this isn't going to go anywhere. You know, Mark Cuban is one of the big guys who's backing it. He understands this world more than me. And he talks about, like, the next generation is a lot more comfortable with cryptocurrencies and blockchain than we are. But basically what it comes down to, and this is the key here for the NHL, and I think it's why the NHL and the Players Association and the alumni are around it, is that right now, when you sell a trading card, the NHL gets the licensing and the players get the licensing at the beginning, the first sale. But then every time it's sold after that, they don't get a cut. It's out of their control. With the blockchain, you can write the code so that every time there's a sale, you can get a cut of it. So all of a sudden, your revenues have a chance to really increase. and you get, you're involved in everything, not just the original part of it. And I'm working to confirm this, and I hope to have it confirmed later today, but from what I understand, that's the case with the NBA. They get a piece of every sale. So all of a sudden, if trading and memorabilia collecting online becomes a big thing again, the NHL could get a piece of every single one of these sales. And these things, these moments, and that's what they're called, moments instead of cards, every sale is on the card. Like, you know, every time it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way that this is going to become a big deal, Pat, is if the blockchain technology works and the crypto technology works, ticket sales are going to go like this. So that, for example, if you buy a ticket to go see the Flames tonight, and I know, Pat, that you use your media pass and you never pay for tickets, but if you buy a ticket to go see the Flames tonight, if you resell it, you get it all. Team doesn't get anything. However, if the code can be written so that every time that ticket is sold, the NHL gets a piece of it, that's a game changer. So there's the collectible side of it, and there's the technology side of it. And these are both big deals. I got a lot of, I have no idea how this works, but we have to look into it.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where we are.
Very interesting. I'm kind of I've definitely started to dabble more and more in the world of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So blockchain is very fascinating to me. So when I heard that on...
Now, is CJ come on your show?
Hasn't been on in a while. Is he a big crypto guy?
Yeah, he's done enough blockchain mining to short out the electricity of a small island. He's really into
that. He's a big miner. Hey, I did not know that. That's yeah. I'm gonna have to text him.
I might
be
exaggerating slightly, but he does it.
That's very cool. I did not know that. I might have to text him on that a little bit later on. Good stuff, Fridge. We will talk to you on Monday, and we'll hear you Friday with the guys in the morning. Be well, my friend.
All right, take care, man. Speak to you later, Pat.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, Calgary's original Infinity destination, serving you for over 28 years. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
All right, it's Peter Klein and Will Nault and Pat Steinberg on a Monday game day, and now Logan Gordon has your biggest stories of the day on Headlines. Logo.
Gentlemen, of course, we start with the Calgary Flames. Another Flames game day from Ottawa. The Flames wrapping up this road trip tonight. They'll go back to David Riddick in goal to finish it off. Jacob Markstrom getting closer, according to Coach Jeff Ward, but still not ready to go for this one. So another early start out east, and the Flames going back to those so-called bubble lines that worked for them last season. Andrew Mangiapane says there's some confidence and some just comfortable feelings when it comes to reuniting those lines.
Yeah, obviously there's good chemistry with these lines and people are comfortable, right? So I think putting these lines back together, could only do good, I think, right? Everyone's comfortable, confident, and we got to go out there and continue to play with confidence and continue to play with the swagger we have together.
Pat, it was obviously a step forward on Saturday for this team, and now it brings up more questions about whether or not the long-term success of this team can thrive under these lines that we've seen a lot of before.
Yep, for sure. And I think, as we talked about last hour, guys, I think this is probably the best move for the team long-term. As much as I've been adamant and hammering the idea of Lindholm at center, they gave it a 21-game go. That's not an insignificant amount of time. They allowed it some time to see if it could work. And I think, Klein, Lindholm worked at center. He was great down the middle, but the rest of the combinations, the rest of the surrounding cast wasn't able to click. Right now, your season's teetering. Right now, you want to try to make your season salvageable. So this probably made sense. And it's a situation where it worked great on Saturday against a not very deep team. I'm going to be really interested to see, not positive nor negative, just interested to see what happens when they take on Edmonton on Saturday, when they take on the Leafs or the Habs or the Jets again with those line combinations as opposed to the ones we saw for the first third of the season.
Yeah, those are going to be the real tests. Again, we've been kind of trying to say, with all due respect to Ottawa, but they aren't going to provide the same resistance that an Edmonton or a Montreal is going to. So knock the cobwebs off for these next couple and get ready to face those teams. Although, again, don't look past Ottawa, because that was embarrassing a few nights ago. But yeah, Will, we're going back to old reliable with the Flames as they need a jumpstart. We talk about how this team's going to look in the postseason. Got to get there first, and it feels like this might be the best way to get there.
Yeah, I don't think we need three guys saying the same thing different ways, so I'll just wrap up and say I'm curious to see what happens tonight.
In terms of tonight's lineup for the Flames, they will be making two changes because the active roster right now, the lineup sheet has no Buddy Robinson, no Glenn Godden, so both those two will come out of the lineup. Any two of Zach Rinaldo, Dominic Simone, or Josh Levo will enter back in. So that's what you're looking like tonight. And Klein, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Godden, who has not played a lot in his very limited NHL team. They have not felt like they just haven't put him into a lot of situations where you could get a real fair evaluation of him.
No, and it's tricky with the fourth line, and again, a lot of special teams last game. But still, I mean, the 5-10 is basically an Ironman compared to where he was for other ones. So maybe just give him an extra day's rest. But it really feels like the best spot for him is in the American Hockey League, and because 5 minutes a night just is not going to get it done.
And it looks
if they had was planned because of the Derek Ryan injury or what. But I mean, it's pretty clear that this guy should be in the American Hockey League. Again, I understand these games have been hard, but quite frankly, I don't see a ton of value. You look at Glenn Godden's five NHL games: 604, 216, 411, 1047, and 510. Only twice has he gotten more than seven shifts. So at this point, look, he might be ready. He might not be. To your point, Pat, we haven't got a fair evaluation.
We just don't know.
But you're wasting the kid's time. Put him in Stockton.
Yeah. If they're not going to play him, I'm completely with you. Like I would have liked to see him get a little bit more of a run. I really would have. I think there's a lot there with Godden, but yeah, he needs to play. He needs to play big minutes. That's exactly what he'll do in Stockton. Kind of seems like that's the way it's going. And on top of that, Derek Ryan is very close to returning. It sounds like maybe it's not on Thursday. Maybe it is on Thursday. We'll see, but you know, Ryan's knocking on the door, so you're probably going to be back in a situation where your forward group is a little less open anyway. So, yes, I would have liked to see Godden get a little bit more of a run. They didn't feel as comfortable in putting him out in larger leverage situations and giving him a little more ice time. So if that's the case, as much as I think there was reason or I think there was impetus to give him a little bit more, if you're not, you might as well play him in the American League. I'm completely with you there, Logo.
So there we go. Flames and Senators, the last of these early starts for a bit here. We're about 20 minutes away from Flames Women with Pat Steinberg from the Envision Custom Renovations Hot Stove Lounge. Derek and Lou with the call. Just after 5 o'clock, Flames and Senators from our nation's capital. 7 games on the NHL schedule tonight, including 2 more in the North Division. The Vancouver Canucks season continues in Winnipeg. They'll take on the Jets for a 6 p.m. puck drop tonight. And then out in Edmonton, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Oilers continuing their series. The Leafs shorthanded in goal once again for this one, guys. Jack Campbell, who had come in for their last win over Edmonton and got the shutout victory, not available for tonight's game. Freddie Anderson still not ready, so the Leafs will go back to Michael Hutchinson in goal against Connor McDavid and company. And head coach Sheldon Keefe giving an update on star Austin Matthews.
He's progressed here today, you know, compared to where he's been in the last few days. So that's very positive here. So he's not ruled out for tomorrow. We're just going to have to see how he is.
So he's a game time decision heading into tonight's action. Other games on the schedule include the St. Louis Blues and the Anaheim Ducks. We'll see if Jordan Binnington can keep his head on his shoulders after having a bit of a freak out after getting pulled against the San Jose Sharks this weekend. The Minnesota Wild meet up with the Vegas Golden Knights. Carolina's in Florida against the Red Hot Panthers. Night ends off with an 8:30 puck drop, Avalanche and Sharks. Klein, lots to get into in this one, but the Maple Leafs probably hoping they can get one of those two goaltenders back in time for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you would hope so. As we've talked about the backup goalie spot in Toronto for a long time, but we've also seen the amount of offensive firepower in this North Division. So, yes, I would suggest having competent goaltending logo, probably a good way to go about things in this North Division.
And, Pat, did you see that freak out by Binnington over the weekend?
I did, and the reason I saw it is because it was trending on Twitter. It's like, what is Binnington doing? And then I saw it. I did indeed, so... We've known that he can have a short fuse in the past. He's always been a guy that, especially for that position, he plays it a little bit more on the edge, like kind of more in the Mike Smith school as opposed to the Jacob Markstrom or Cam Talbot school. Those guys, very even keel. There could be explosions going on 5 feet from them, and they would be dialed right in, and it wouldn't change their focus. Guys like Smith, guys like Binnington play a little bit more on the edge, a little bit more emotional. Neither's better nor worse, just kind of the observations that I've had in that respect. So, you know, Binnington has lost his cool before, and yes, I definitely did see the freak out because it was trending on Twitter.
Yeah, that was the coordinates. If you haven't seen it, go take a look. He takes quite the path to the visiting dressing room. He stops by the Sharks bench. He punches Eric Karlsson. Devin Dubnyk gets in his face. It was all very entertaining. We'll see if he's back in the net for the Blues
tonight. My favorite is the amount of people that were very quick, because the internet never forgets, the amount of people that were really quick to retweet his "Am I nervous or do I look nervous?" Real quick. Yeah. to retweet
do
that.
Do I look nervous?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would say that Jordan Binnington, ever since your cup run, you have not been the same. That's all I will say on that front. He's still a very good goaltender, but he's not 930 good.
I don't know if you look nervous, but you certainly don't look calm either there, Jordan. So we'll see what the Blues do against Anaheim later tonight, guys. And, of course, the big news out of the NFL this morning coming from the man himself, J.J. Watt, announcing in an Instagram post that simply says, "Source me." He's lifting weights with an Arizona Cardinals t-shirt on. He's signing a 2-year deal with the club, reuniting himself with former Houston Texans teammate DeAndre Hopkins. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network has it as a 2-year deal worth $31 million, $23 million of it guaranteed. He was in Houston for 10 years, Will. The selling process began for a number of teams as soon as the Texans and Watt parted ways. I'm not sure the Cardinals were ever the favorites, but clearly interested in reuniting with his former teammate in Houston. And now we see what the future looks like for the 3-time Defensive Player of the Year in Arizona.
Yeah, and that Arizona team is one that certainly is trying to, I would suggest, stay up with the Joneses or stay with the arms race in the NFC West. This division is bananas. You throw in Stafford going to the Rams and how good they already are, the Seahawks doing what they're doing, and can they please their star quarterback, the Cardinals doing what they're doing, and the Niners, who, when healthy, are still very much a Super Bowl contender. So it's a hell of a division, and I would suggest that today you might want to pull the reins back a little bit on this side. Look, J.J. Watt is a hell of a player, but he's also 32 years old, and he's dealt with a ton of injuries in his career. I have laughed and had a lot of fun today at some of the tweets going back. J.J. Watt, 95 sacks since 2012. Well, yes, 69 of those sacks came from 2012 to 2015. So I'm going to hold off on saying J.J. Watt's going to take them to the promised land, but it's a huge signing. The Cardinals don't usually get coups like this in free agency, so that's awesome. But yeah, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's going to be a huge impact maker. He's a bit piece on an already pretty good team, Pat. I'm not certain that he's going to, especially in that division, necessarily make the biggest difference. The most interesting thing for me is reuniting with teammate DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, those sack totals are definitely down. J.J. Watt is not the same guy that he was, Kleiner, no doubt about it. When J.J. was in his mid to late 20s, that might have been the most unstoppable force that we've seen in recent memory in the NFL. That's not who he was. I think he'll help. That's not who he is, rather, anymore. I still think he'll help Arizona. I still think he'll be a nice addition, but to expect him to be the dominant guy that he was even going back to 2018... No, probably not for JJ. I like it more from a story perspective. I like the idea of him reuniting with DeAndre Hopkins. You know how much Hopkins was in his ear saying, get here, get here. He was on that train the minute we found out that JJ and the Texans were parting ways. So I like it more for a story than I do for... I still think it's got football impact, but I like the story more than I think the actual football impact will be huge.
Yeah, now just trade Kyler for Deshaun Watson and just reunite that whole group out there in Arizona. But no, like he's going to help. And I think this is very much Arizona seeing the success Tampa Bay had in that Super Bowl and what a pass rush can do. But I think J.J. Watt probably doesn't have to clear off any more room for Defensive Player of the Year honors on his trophy case. I think he's probably done with that, but still a fine signing for Arizona today.
So let's fit for headlines today, guys. The Flames finish off a road trip in Ottawa. They'll go back to David Rittich in goal, part of seven games on the NHL schedule tonight, including...
You're locked on to the big show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. With new product families, member rewards, and sales events, you'll find more quality, more savings in every department, every day at Calgary Co-op.
10 minutes away from your one-hour pregame show for Flames hockey. Flames warm up at 4 o'clock. Calgary and the Ottawa Senators for a third consecutive game. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. We're going inside hockey with our good buddy Nick Alberga from Sportsnet. He's our fantasy hockey expert, getting you set for the week ahead in fantasy hockey, which starts in just over an hour's time. So let's help you get your lineup set if you'd like to leave it last minute. Hello, Mr. Alberga.
Hey, Pat. How are you today?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And I really enjoyed it. I was able to read the entire 20 fantasy thoughts this week from you, and some really, really good stuff to dive into. And let's dive into maybe the biggest story over the last week or so in the hockey world, and that is the dismissal of Claude Julien as head coach in Montreal. From a fantasy standpoint, what really jumps out to you there?
You're right. Tons of fallout from certainly Dominique Ducharme coming in as the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. And we can start in between the pipes when it comes to Carey Price. I think now is a good time to sort of bench Carey Price, make sure, he's back to normal or back to more of his standards we've seen earlier this season. His February was dreadful, 3.28 and 880, 14 goals over the past three starts. So I think if you own Carey Price, I would sit him for the time being. I think if you don't own Carey Price, I think he's a really, really good buy-low option right now. And conversely, Jake Allen's a guy I would make a move for in the trade market in terms of fantasy hockey. 4-2-2, a 2.12, a 9.29. Not overly tested on Saturday in that OT loss to the Winnipeg Jets, where I thought Montreal thoroughly dominated. But still, I think Jake Allen's got a lot of attached value this season and beyond. Ahead of that, in terms of players as well, Thomas Tatar and Philippe Danault come to mind of two guys who could benefit from the coaching change. For the most part, to start this season, they were in Claude Julien's doghouse. So look at those two guys. And I'll classify this guy as a deep sleeper, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, just because of Dominique Ducharme and how he's done in his career when it comes to junior and, the maturation process of younger type players. And I think him and Kotkaniemi could be a nice relationship to look at here.
You mentioned the Carey Price situation, how rough his February was, and there's one goaltending move you can think about, looking maybe more at Allen than Price, and the goalie carousel around the league very much in full swing right now.
Oh, no doubt about that. You even look there in Calgary, and I know Jacob Markstrom closing in on a potential return, but I think you take a sniff at David Rittich on the waiver wire. I think he's been pretty good as of late, with exception of that one game, of course, against the Sens. Even in Toronto, I know Jack Campbell won't play tonight, so just monitor that situation for now when he is playing. I think he's a really, really good fantasy stopgap. Frederick Anderson hurt right now. And Antti Raanta out in Arizona, I think you look at him. Darcy Kemper is banged up. In terms of buy-low options, I think Carter Hart comes to mind. He's been awful this year, 6-3-3, a 3.35, 899. Granted, he had a good start against Buffalo on Sunday, but it's the Sabres. And Jordan Binnington, I think, is a good buy-low look as well. His February was awful. He tried to fight everybody on San Jose the other night as well, but he was 3-5-1, a 2.78, a 901. And a couple other guys I'll throw out there, John Quick, Cal Peterson of L.A., and Cam Talbot and Kaapo Kähkönen with the Minnesota Wild.
Nick Alberg is with us, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.ca. He is our fantasy hockey expert. Vladimir Tarasenko closing in on a return in St. Louis. So what does Tarasenko's return to the Blues lineup mean for your fantasy lineup?
Yeah, the Tarasenko watch is on, and I don't know what's happened here. Maybe they over-speculated on the injury, but he's back way ahead of when we thought he was going to be back here. I mean, there was rumors he wouldn't even play at all in the regular season, but it sounds like he's going to get in at some point in time this week for St. Louis. One of the more banged-up teams in this league throughout this season. Every game they lose a guy, and so, you know, getting Tarasenko back is big from the fantasy value of everybody who's healthy on that roster. Torrey Krug, Braden Schenn, David Perron, Mike Hoffman, and of course the goaltender, Jordan Binnington. By the way, it'll be Ville Husso tonight for the St. Louis Blues. But in practice the last couple of weeks or so, Tarasenko has been skating with Braden Schenn and David Perron. So I'm not just talking about Tarasenko, but I think you look at heightened value of guys like Schenn and David Perron potentially on the trade market. So you get a guy like Tarasenko back in this fantasy world and you own him on your roster, you're going to be feeling pretty good about life right now.
You've got a few short-term options for us down the middle.
Yeah, it seems like everybody's day-to-day right now. Auston Matthews, Jack Eichel was on the weekend for Buffalo. Evgeny Kuznetsov with Washington, Dylan Larkin. I know the Red Wings only playing twice this week, so you're probably jumping out on everybody Red Wings anyways. But I think you look at guys like Trevor Zegras, the rookie out in Anaheim. William Karlsson has had a strong last couple weeks for Vegas. They've jumbled up their top nine, so keep mind of that. Jack Roslovic with Columbus, and Jeff Carter of the Los Angeles Kings. I don't know about you, Pat, but a big story for me in this NHL season early on has been the fountain of youth. You can find a guy, say, over the age of 35 on probably every team in this league who is having an unbelievable season right now. It's pretty crazy.
And finally, maybe the most important thing is to find nice little places you can exploit in the weekly schedule. What does this week hold for fantasy owners?
Yeah, so you mentioned off the top, this week, Utterly Singh is just hectic. 57 games. You know, I think in March in general, it's important to bring up, too, it's unprecedented, too. There are eight teams, if you knew this, in March playing 17 games. That's more than a game a day or a game a day and then some. These teams are going to be very, very fatigued, very, very tired. I'm very curious to see what they do when it comes to goaltenders. But there are 22 teams with four games. I like the schedules of Carolina, Colorado and Vegas the most. I think in the waiver wire, you look at Martin Natchez, Jesper Foss, who's been in the top six lately for the Carolina Hurricanes with Colorado. Reminder that Cale Makar won't play the first two games or the last two games of this road trip in San Jose. So I think Bowen Byram comes to mind again, Andre Burakovsky, Brandon Saad. And then in Vegas, Alex Tuck, you know, Chandler Stevenson, a couple names that I think, you know, Cody Glass, another guy I would look at in Vegas. And again, Detroit's the only team you want to stay away from this week, and you should anyways because they're dreadful and have really, really struggled this season, but they only played two games, the only team in the league to do so. Some other waiver looks I would look at, Pavel Zacha with New Jersey. Drake Batherson has quietly been red hot for Ottawa. He's got goals in five in a row and six of the last seven, as Flames fans certainly know. Jared McCann's playing on a line with Brian Rust and Evgeny Malkin in Pittsburgh. I like a look at Zach Sanford this week as well, playing on the top line in St. Louis. Niels Höglander with the Vancouver Canucks, and I mentioned Alex Tuck as well. So there's plenty of value to be found out there.
Great stuff, Nick. You can check out his Fantasy 20 Thoughts every Sunday at sportsnet.ca. He joins us every Monday to help you set your lineup. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure. Have a great game tonight.
Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Cal and Gary's is the only family of products curated for the tastes of Calgarians. And you'll only find them at Calgary Co-op.
That'll do it for an abbreviated edition of the Sports Drive at 5 Eastern. That'll do it for the big show for our outstanding producer, Logan Gordon, for Will Knowlton, for Peter Klein. My name is Pat Steinberg. Full show for you tomorrow. But up next, it's Calgary Flames warm-up. We'll hear from Jeff Ward. We'll hear from Nikita Nesterov and a whole lot more. Calgary looking to make it back-to-back wins to close out this six-game road trip tonight on the road in Ottawa. The show has come at you live today from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at Iconic EC. Peter Labardius in the house. Flames warm up about 2 minutes away on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.